From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Rockier World's coming from well off the pace here as they make their way into the turn. He's a good 10 lengths off the lead. Then toward the inside, it's O Pesos. They're being followed by Midnight Bourbon, who's well off the pace as well.
Gray didn't get away from there as clean as we had hoped, obviously. It would definitely not be the right time to miss the break.
It wasn't his best start, but that race is already run. I think what you're evaluating now is the physical condition of the horse. His spacing in his three-year-old races leading up to the Derby, I think, have allowed him to be in peak physical condition. And the Derby wasn't his best run ever, and he came out of it with plenty of energy. So we're obviously feel very good about how we are looking the week of the Preakness.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com.
Risk-taking, grabs the lead right there, outside the 16th pole, and he begins to edge away from Rock Sugar. It's risk-taking here in the fourth.
Crowded Trade driving up on the outside. Hyperactive Chris. Crowded Trade, after that slow start, gets the job done nonetheless.
So I have the benefit of 6 weeks again with these two horses out of the wood. So I was thinking about this race, you know, having the time, I'm able to really train the horses the way I want to prepare for a race like this. If you're coming out of the Derby into that race, you know, it's much different. You don't really have much time to think or do anything. I guess there's not much planning. Some people throw a little breeze in, and most people don't now. So it just depends on how much time you have to work with. And I guess additionally, what kind of horse you're working with as far as their foundation goes. I have two horses. One's run a little bit more than the other. So they're a little bit different stage of their careers and experience level. But they both seem to be coming in the right way. And I have been able to train these two exactly the way I wanted to. So they don't have any excuse going in.
Now here's Mike Penna.
Well, what a difference a week makes, huh? Yeah, good morning once again, everyone, and welcome to the show that launched a network, the Equine Forum, presented all month long by FarmPaint.com right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, happy to have you with me for the next 3 hours, right up until 11 a.m. Eastern. Yeah, what a difference a week makes. And if you feel like you've been beat up and kicked around a little this week, you're not alone. It's been another tough week for those of us who love the sport of thoroughbred racing. And this is a week when we're supposed to be celebrating the middle jewel of our sports Triple Crown, one of the greatest sporting events on the calendar each year. Last Saturday, 24 hours before the word betamethasone became almost as common, at least in our circles, as Tylenol, I open this show, as I typically do, by tossing out our poll question for the morning. And I asked, is Bob Baffert the greatest thoroughbred trainer of all time? 50% of you who responded said, yeah, he's in the conversation, sure. 26% of you said, absolutely. And only 24% of you chose not even close. If I asked that question this morning, I wonder how much different those answers would look. I think they'd look a lot different. 8 days after that gutsy win in the Kentucky Derby by Medina Spirit, Bob Baffert called a press conference last Sunday at his Churchill Downs barn to say this.
Yesterday, I got a call from Jimmy Barnes. I was headed to the airport, and I got some horrible news. He said he had some horrible news for me, that he'd just been served by the Kentucky Race Commission, that Medina Spirit, our Derby horse, had been tested positive for 21 picograms of betamethasone.
Yeah, 21 picograms of betamethasone. Bob Baffert described it as a gut punch. Forget about a gut punch. This was a Mike Tyson haymaker to the horse racing industry. And when Louisville's native son, Muhammad Ali, and I thought about this as I was thinking about what happened in Louisville, knocked out Sonny Liston in their 1964 title bout, it was with a punch which is still today referred to as the Phantom Punch because you never see it coming. That's what this was. Forget about a gut punch. This was a Phantom Punch right in the kisser for horse racing. And who would have thought that on the sport's biggest stage, the guy who is and has been, let's face it, the face of the sport, would be the one accused of a positive test 8 days after becoming the all-time leading trainer in Kentucky Derby history. And Bob didn't really do himself many favors when he immediately came out and said that Medina Spirit had been given betamethasone. Didn't do himself a whole lot of favors because now, if the split sample comes back positive, he really has nowhere to go. Okay, and maybe he, Bob Baffert, never gave him the medication directly. But if it comes back positive, well, he got it somewhere. I'm pretty sure that Medina Spirit didn't run down to Walgreens one night and pick up some betamethasone. So somehow, some way, it was in his system. Somebody had a hand in getting it there. And if the tests come back positive, it's going to fall on Bob Baffert. Whether he gave it to the horse or not, he's the head coach, he's the boss. And he would probably be the first one to tell you that. The buck stops there. It has to stop there. So now we wait. And the split sample will likely take several weeks to get back. If it does confirm the medication overage, Medina Spirit is going to join Dancer's Image in 1968 as the only Derby winners to be disqualified. In the court of public opinion, at least if you believe what is said by those who participate on social media, for example, Bob Baffert is already guilty. But thank goodness we live in a country that allows us due process. But what if, and I know it's highly unlikely, but what if that split sample comes back negative for those levels of betamethasone? And for those of you who have been on the side of horse racing needing federal intervention to police itself, I got news for you. This is the industry policing itself. The Kentucky stewards, think about it, the Kentucky stewards did their job when they received this news. The testing, at least the first step of the testing, worked. The process of acquiring a split sample is the proper next step. And if it comes back positive, the necessary steps will be taken. But that is where it often falls apart in our sport. And many sports, for that example. Horse racing is not the Lone Ranger. The punishments for those who are proven not to play by the rules or to mess up in some way, the punishments often have no teeth. The other side of this that nobody is talking about, at least I haven't seen it mentioned anywhere, is that it takes away the incredibly positive story of a horse who, let's face it, nobody wanted. He's from the first crop of an unheralded $5,000 stallion Protonico. He sold for $1,000 as a yearling, and he's now a Kentucky Derby winner. That's the story we should be talking about, and we should have been talking about for the last 2 weeks. Did the increased level of betamethasone help him in becoming a Kentucky Derby winner? I don't know. From everything I've read, that doesn't seem likely. But I'm going to ask an expert that question and more when Dr. Mary Scalay joins me later in this first hour at 8:35 Eastern. And what if Medina Spirit wins the Preakness later today? Have you thought about that? What if he wins? Is horse racing ready to continue talking about this for the next 3 weeks? Because you know it's going to be the dominant headline leading up to the Belmont Stakes, even though Medina Spirit has passed all the tests necessary at Pimlico, and he's 100% clean of betamethasone right now and anything else that you could test for. But you know this is going to be the dominant headline for the next 3 weeks. Is the sport of thoroughbred racing ready for that? So here's the poll question today, based on that fact. You go to @HRN Twitter and Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Are you cheering for Medina Spirit to win the Preakness? Are you? Yes or no It's pretty simple. If he wins, you have to keep answering these questions about medication for the next 3 weeks. Forget about going for a triple crown. It's going to be, he was drugged when he won the Kentucky Derby. Shouldn't even be in this position. Yeah, we're not going to be talking about the good side of this story. Are you cheering for Medina Spirit to win the Preakness today? Yes or no? At HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. And you can also email the show if you don't do social media, mike@horseracingradio.net. Let me know your thoughts. Believe it or not, there are plenty of positive storylines with this year's Preakness field, and you're going to hear about many of those over the course of the show this morning, the next 3 hours. Coming up in a few minutes, Mike McCarthy, who will send out Ron Bauer, is going to be with me. He'll be with me right around 8:15. At 8:30, it's time for today's first bet, followed by Dr. Mary Scolay talking about this medication and what this means and the testing procedures. I'll ask her, is betamethasone, that particular level of betamethasone or any level, performance enhancing? Is that why Medina Spirit won the Kentucky Derby? I'm going to ask her that question at 8:35. 9 o'clock, you'll hear from Hall of Fame trainer Todd Pletcher, still trying to win his first Preakness, believe it or not. And he'll tell you why that race has been so challenging for him and for his team. 9:25, we will take a break from the Preakness talk to look ahead to the upcoming meet at Canterbury Park in Minnesota. I'm going to be joined by Vice President of Racing Operations, Andrew Offerman. Again, 9:25 Eastern. 9:40, another special edition of Unsung Heroes presented by Claiborne. I'm going to welcome longtime Chad Brown assistant Jose Hernandez for that segment. It's one you won't want to miss at 9:40. 10 o'clock, Sean Clancy will pay us a visit. 10:25, a special Preakness edition of Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. And at 10:40, you're going to hear from trainers Steve Asmussen and Chad Brown. All of that yet to come on a very busy Preakness morning edition of the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com on HRRN.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
Hi, this is Joe Nicholson. During these difficult times, the team at Nicholson Insurance Agency sends best wishes to all for good health. We can all look forward to better times ahead when this pandemic is behind us. But in the meantime, we need to stay safe. Although the staff at Nicholson Insurance is working from home, phone calls into the office are forwarded so that service remains intact. Customer service professionals continue to be ready, willing, and able to help you with your insurance needs, whether it be equine, farm, home, auto, business, or life. Several of Nicholson Insurance Agency's companies are returning portions of auto premiums because of reduced travel during the isolation period, which I think is the right thing to do. Please call 859-224-7080, Nicholson Insurance Agency. Thank you.
The Spring Summer Meet is live now at Gulfstream Park. Live racing Thursday through Sunday through September 26th. Look forward to the Summit of Speed on Saturday, July 3rd, and the FTBOA Florida Sire Stakes Series, which begins July 31st. Stay in on the action from the comfort of your mobile phone using First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. For the stakes schedule, tips and analysis, and seat reservations, visit GulfstreamPark.com. On-site tickets are limited, so book your seats now.
Pin Oak Stud's Alternation ranks highly among Kentucky's fourth crop sires by percentage of black type winners from runners. With nearly $5.5 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by five black type horses in 2020. His brilliant Kentucky Oaks winner, Serengeti Empress, won the Grade 1 Ballerina at Saratoga and was runner up in the Breeders' Cup Filly Mare Sprint. First or second in six Grade 1 events, Serengeti Empress amassed over $2.1 million. Alternation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
This is Florent Giroux, and you are listening to HRRN.
And it's My House Do It. He's 30-1 and comes off the turn still clear. Jovanica, the filly, gaining ground, though. She's up in a second. It's My House, furlong to go. Jovanica takes the lead, though. And here comes Rombauer on the outside. Rombauer with good-looking strides. Jovanica, the filly, trying to hang tough. But Rombauer's up alongside. These two to the finish together. Rombauer! Rombauer got there in a perfectly timed ride by Kyle Frey. Jovanica ran her heart out in second.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented all month long by our friends at farmpaint.com. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Preakness morning. That call of the El Camino Real Derby, a big win for Rombauer, who then went on to finish third in the Grade 2 Bluegrass behind champion Essential Quality in a big, big effort. He returns today in the Preakness, looking to topple the Derby winner and everybody else. We'll see if he can pull it off for trainer Mike McCarthy. Post time for the Preakness, by the way, set for 6:47 Eastern. It's going to go a few minutes after that, but we'll have the coverage for you this afternoon, 5 o'clock Eastern, exclusively in partnership with NBC Sports Audio Network. So join us on stations around the country and on SiriusXM satellite radio, and, of course, streaming worldwide at horseracingradio.net. Mike, you're with me now, and good morning, and we'd love to be talking about Rombauer in the winner's circle after that race, my friend.
Yeah, thank you guys for having me. That would be awfully nice.
Yeah, he's a really cool horse. When you and I talked earlier this spring, it was before the El Camino Real Derby, you were hoping to run him at Santa Anita, ended up calling the audible. I know that at that point you weren't thrilled. Boy, that worked out okay, huh?
Yeah, it worked out well. I thought his race, his comeback race in the El Camino Real Derby, a little bit farther back than we would have liked, was able to get his nose down at the wire. Not often you see a horse come off of a 90-day, a little bit of a 90-day in-training freshening, first race back a mile and an eighth, and run the way he did in the style that he did it. Kind of up in the air about where we were going to make our second start. I wanted to run him right out of his own stall in the Santa Anita Derby. I thought we would get a nice pace set up. Somehow we kind of ended up going to the Bluegrass after giving the Goth or the Woods some consideration as well. On paper, the Bluegrass looked like it was fairly paceless. I can't blame Florent. We kept him a little bit closer that day than we would have liked. Hit a little bit of a flat spot around the turn, finished up through the lane. Obviously, no disgrace in running third to a champion. Galloped out well. Come back here. Horses had a series of nice works. From what I saw yesterday, the way the racetrack is, it looked like anything that was up close was in pretty good shape. There may have been one or two horses that made up some ground, but nobody made up any real significant ground. This horse's style, he's a little bit more prone to being a deep closer. We'll leave that up to Flavien today, what he wants to do.
Yeah, it's a great point. It was somewhat, I won't call it speed favoring, but you're right. You had to be up close yesterday in those races. Do you think about changing the strategy, Mike, and trying to get him up in the race like you did in the Bluegrass?
I don't want to do that too much. Look, he will get a mile in 3/16. There's a few horses probably loading up in the starting gate that may not be their ideal distance. So I'd rather be going forward at the finish line than backward. So if he has to lay a little bit closer than what I'd like, I'll be okay with that, depending on race shape. But I think to kind of have him in the thick of things would be a mistake.
You mentioned his series of workouts he's had since the Bluegrass Stakes, and on paper they are ultra impressive, but that, of course, only tells us one side of the story. As the man who's sitting there watching him train every single morning, what have you seen from him from the Bluegrass to today?
He's been pretty much over the last 10 months or so just the same every day. Goes out there, goes about his business, trains well, very athletic, not an overly big horse, medium size. He's got great mechanics. You know, his best weapon is probably what's in between his ears. He's a smart little guy. he's put on some weight. He hasn't grown much height-wise, but he's put on some pounds and looks well. And, you know, sometimes everybody thinks big horses want to run real far, and that's not always the case.
How tempting was it to take a shot at the Kentucky Derby?
It was very tempting. I thought he would have loved the racetrack there. Obviously, he's got a couple of good races on the – he's got a good race on the grass when he broke his maiden, a bit of a muddled start in the Del Mar juvenile turf. He never really got to uncork a run, but galloped out well that day. And then in the El Camino Real Derby on the synthetic, obviously, as we spoke of earlier, was very good there. So I think he's a horse that likes to hear his feet rattle a little bit. What I saw yesterday, the track seemed like it was a little bit on the deeper side, but, you know, he's a horse that doesn't need to take his racetrack with him, any surface, anywhere. He seems to just show up, and I'm planning on seeing more or less the same thing here today.
Talking with trainer Mike McCarthy, trainer of Rombauer, in this afternoon's Preakness Stakes. Mike, last week I had a chance to visit with Robertino Diodoro, and we talked about Keep Me in Mind and his effort in the Kentucky Derby. And one thing he pointed out was that with his horse's running style, because he does like to come from off the pace, he really didn't – it wasn't overly taxing for him the way it was for a horse like Medina Spirit, for example, who did have to battle all the way through the stretch and all the way to the wire. He thought that gives him an advantage. You're a completely fresh horse coming in here, having not run since the Bluegrass on April 3rd. How much stock do you put into that, the fresh horse angle?
With the fresh horse angle, I think very few horses are able to come back on short rest and give it 110%. You know, I don't train Robertino's horse, so I don't know what he's made of. He's actually stabled in the stall next to us. Very big, very strong, very athletic-looking horse. I think that it is a little bit easier when you're coming from off of it. You don't do all the dirty work up front. So there is some merit to what he's saying.
You know, Mike, I opened the show, you know, talking about the situation with Bob Baffert and the announcement that came out last weekend, I guess, on Sunday. And I said, it seems like so many of us, when we're supposed to be celebrating this middle jewel of our Triple Crown, feel like we've been beat up over the course of the past 6 or 7 days. Is it the same way for people like yourself, other trainers that are involved in the sport? Do you kind of feel that way, or have you been able to weather that storm a little bit?
You know, I haven't given it a whole lot of thought. There's 8 other guys participating in this race today that have done everything they can to get to this point. And, you know, it's nice to be able to validate, obviously, what they've done and for their owners and for their staff and what have you. Bob's deal is Bob's deal. I don't know a whole lot of the details. It's a shame that that's probably going to be the biggest story here today and maybe not the winner of the Preakness. But unfortunately, in our game, we've got a way about us where we tend to shoot ourselves in the foot at the most inopportune times. I don't think, after seeing what Bob's gone through, I don't think I'd wish that on anybody. But here we are. Hope it gets worked out for him. I'll be here tomorrow morning doing what I do. Everybody else will be here tomorrow morning doing what they do. So. The grind doesn't stop, but it is unfortunate that something like this has got to be swirling around on a day like today.
Yeah, I actually threw out a poll question this morning on our social media and on email that people are starting to weigh in on. And I said, you know, is the sport of thoroughbred racing ready if Medina Spirit wins the Preakness? Because this will be the dominating conversation over the next 3 weeks going into the Belmont, not the fact that we have a horse going for a Triple Crown, which is very, very sad, but that's the way it's going to be. So, it's one of the situations, like you said, Mike, you'll be at the barn tomorrow, you'll be doing your job, the beat will go on, and horse people are very thick-skinned, they have big boy pants on, if you will, and we're going to have to, especially if Medina Spirit wins this race later today. But I know what your vote's going to be. You're going to vote no to that question and say, I hope he doesn't, but for a whole different reason.
Yeah, certainly. And, you know, on the flip side, if you've got a horse that's won the first 2 legs of the Triple Crown, it's always it's great for the sport. I don't know if you know, I don't know how it's perceived if this horse were to jump up and win this evening. How people would look at it, but it's I guess we'll just see how this story unfolds, you know.
What's the week been like in Baltimore? How many crab cakes have you already eaten?
Unfortunately for me, I'm allergic to shellfish, so there has been zero crab cakes or blue crabs or whatever kind of crabs they are consumed. Can't say enough about the hospitality that everybody has shown for the horsemen here. Grooms, hot walkers, meals provided every day, round the clock, soft drinks, snacks, all that kind of stuff. It is really, really first class the way they roll out the carpet for everybody here. Anything you need, they go ahead, they get it for you. Courtesy cars, drivers, all that kind of stuff. So hats off to everybody at Pimlico for doing something like this. I know there's a lot of big race days where they don't give you quite the attention that they're giving you here. So we're really grateful for it. It's been fantastic.
Yeah, the Preakness has always been known for that. It is one of the top events in thoroughbred racing in all of sports, and Mike McCarthy is hoping to add his name to the list of trainers to win that historic race coming up later today with Rombauer. Mike, I know it's a busy morning. I told you I wouldn't keep you, so I'll let you go. All the best later today, and thanks so much for taking the time.
Thank you guys for having me. Have good luck today.
All right, you too. Mike McCarthy here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Rombauer, can he do it? Well, he's going to need that bluegrass effort and then some, but certainly possible. And I thought what Mike said was a great point, talking about the way that the track played yesterday. Trying on the main track, you had to be relatively close. Rombauer's best races, although his bluegrass was good when he was up close, but his best races, his wins have come when he's been further back and rallied late. So we'll see if they decide to tweak things. But as you heard him say, he'd prefer not to do that if they can settle into a good spot and make that one late run. That would be their best chance at success later today in the 146 Preakness. All right, when I come back, it's time for today's first bet, and I will welcome Dr. Mary Scalay to talk more about the situation involving Medina Spirit. That's next, right after your Lexus Legends of the Turf, which is brought to you every Saturday at this time by Lexus of Lexington.
The World Championship of Thoroughbred Racing was on the line at the lovely, majestic Longchamp Racecourse just outside Paris on October 3, 1965, when the most prestigious Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe was about to unfold. And what a star-studded fielder was on hand to contest it. Meadow Court from Ireland, Oncidium from England, Aniline from the Soviet Union, Ragazzo, Soderini, Diatomy, Reliance, Caliph, Marco Visconti, Francis Great Seabird, the Big Chestnut, Little Tom Rolfe from America, and Free Ride, who was an entry with Diatomy. A huge crowd had gathered at the glorious Longchamp Racecourse, which in all its splendor was among the aesthetically most beautiful in the world. It exuded class, and there was class aplenty on the racetrack to match it on this day. In the paddock, Seabird, the big local favorite, looked somewhat skittish and was sweating, as was Reliance, although it was a very warm day and the sun was beating down. Tom Rolfe, the American entry, was calm and created a stir among the crowd as he was ponied during the post-parade to the start. French racegoers had not been accustomed to that practice at their races. Oncidium, the English horse, was showing signs of nervousness. Aniline, the Russian entry, was very businesslike, calm, and quiet. At the starting post, Oncidium caused some problems, but the rest of the field lined up in perfect order. At the break, Marco Visconti went right to the front. Caliph picked up to chase, and Meadow Court and Aniline were up near the front as well. Seabird, with Australian Pat Glennon in the saddle, and Reliance, with renowned Yves Saint-Martin up, were well-rated, in no difficulty, running fifth and sixth. They were obviously stalking the leaders, waiting for the right time to make that one big run. The going was on the soft side of Longchamp that day, and America's Tom Rolfe was showing definite signs of difficulty in handling it. He was far back and never really got into the hunt, so to speak. As the field rounded the bend and started for home at the top of the stretch, Glennon let loose on Seabird, and he chewed up huge pieces of turf with long, smooth strides until he veritably flew by the front quartet to assume command at the top of the straight to pull out to an open six-length lead. That incredible display of speed had shot him forward as though propelled by a rocket. Saint-Martin asked his mount Reliance for a move at the same time Seabird moved, but there was no way he could stay with the flying French chestnut. Seabird maintained the margin to win by 6 open lengths over the previously unbeaten Reliance, and it was another 5 back to Diatomy with Free Ride 4th and Aniline 5th. Seabird had turned in a phenomenal effort, totally dominating the other 19 horses in the field, and he was now to be compared with the famous Rebo. After retirement from the racetrack, Seabird came to stand at stud in America for John W. Galbraith, and as a consequence, his legacy lives on in the world of American racing. That performance, October 3rd, 1965, at Longchamp in the Prix de l'Arc de Triomphe, was indeed a great moment in thoroughbred racing.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and innovative technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience driving any Lexus model is unparalleled. Visit Lexus of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for over 15 years. Experience the enjoyment of Lexus and the enjoyment of shopping Lexus of Lexington. The people there truly make the difference. Long-tenured, friendly, knowledgeable team members, no pressure, no hassle. I promise, it's not your typical dealership experience. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, and Lexus of Lexington continues to sponsor Keeneland's Raven Run Stakes each fall. So from one horse person to another, the next best thing to being around horses is driving a Lexus. Visit Lexus of Lexington and tell them Mike sent you.
Racing fans, join us on Saturday for the Middle Jewel in Racing's Triple Crown, the Preakness Stakes from Baltimore, Maryland. Admission gates will open for simulcast wagering on Saturday at 7 a.m. and infield admission gates will open at 9 a.m. Although Santa Anita is now open to the general public, please visit santaanita.com/open for reserved seating. Walk-up admission is not yet available. With a tremendous undercard coming in from Pimlico Racecourse earlier in the day, first live post on Saturday is 12:30 p.m. Make plans to join us on Sunday as there will be a mandatory payout on the 20-cent Rainbow Pick 6 jackpot with a total pool expected to reach $3 million. If you can't join us in person, all of Santa Anita's races are still available free of charge at santaanita.com/live, and you can watch and wager via First Bet. That's first.com/bet. With first post time on Saturday at 12:30 p.m., be sure to join Tom Quigley and a special guest at 11:20 a.m. as they handicap the day's card at santaanita.com/live. And don't forget a pair of low takeout wagers laid in the card each racing day for both Santa Anita and Golden Gate Fields, the $5 Golden Hour Double and the $1 Golden Hour Pick Four.
Pin Oak Studs Alternation ranks highly among Kentucky's fourth crop sires by percentage of block type winners from runners. With nearly $5.5 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by 5 block type horses in 2020. His brilliant Kentucky Oaks winner, Serengeti Empress, won the Grade 1 Ballerina at Saratoga and was runner up in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. First or second in 6 Grade 1 events, Serengeti Empress amassed over $2.1 million. Alternation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
This week's Flair Fact is brought to you by Achieve Equine, maker of Flair Equine Nasal Strips. The word colic means pain from the abdominal cavity, although most often it is the digestive organs such as the small intestine or large intestine that cause this pain. There are many other organs that can be causing colic. Examples of these are kidneys, spleens, and ovaries. For more Flair Facts, visit flairstrips.com/learn.
Hi, this is Penelope Miller, and you're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum. Presented by FarmPaint.com on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. Time now to get you ready to bet the races later today at Pimlico. And to do that, we turn our attention to today's first bet.
And now, today's first bet.
Today's first bet comes in race 7 at Pimlico, 207 Eastern. It is number 2, Burning Bright, who is 8-1 on the morning line. His 31% win projection is third highest on the 14-race card. He has an 18-point spread over the next best competitor, which is easily widest at Pimlico today. Ranks first in 11 important first bet handicapping factors for the race, is first or second in 4 straight races, and the son of champion Forever Together lures Javier Castellano, who has a history of big Preakness weekends at Pimlico. Number 2, Burning Bright, in race 7 at Pimlico. Today's first bet. And I'm back to visit with Dr. Mary Scalay in 60 seconds right after this word from First Bet.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's number1st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Yeah, going to be a lot of First Bets being made later this afternoon on that Preakness card. Don't forget our coverage later today in partnership with NBC Sports Audio Network comes your way 5 o'clock Eastern, 5 to 7:30. You can tune in on affiliates across the country on SiriusXM satellite radio, and you can stream us worldwide, Bluetooth us in your car, whatever you need to do. You can do that at horseracingradio.net. Well, as I told you, the dominating storyline over the course of the past 2 weeks has not been the Derby winner trying to take the middle jewel of the Triple Crown. It has surrounded the medication positive that was announced last Sunday by Hall of Fame trainer Bob Baffert talking about Medina Spirit. And to help fill you in on what this all means, let's welcome in Dr. Mary Scalay. She is with me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And if you don't know Mary, you should. You've seen her on TV. You've heard her on the radio. She is the Executive Director and Chief Operating Officer of the RMTC. That's the Racing Medication and Testing Consortium. Dr. Scalay, good morning.
Good morning.
Happy to have you with me. And, you know, it's been quite a week. I know that you've been answering questions all week long, and I'll ask you a few more here this morning. But let's start with the medication itself. Betamethasone, what is it, and what is its proper prescribed use with equines?
Sure. Betamethasone is a steroid. It's a corticosteroid, not to be confused with an anabolic steroid. So it's a type of cortisone, and it is used to for its anti-inflammatory effects. It reduces the signs of inflammation, and the signs of inflammation are heat, redness, pain, and swelling. Think of a bee sting, and you put cortisone cream on that to reduce those symptoms. It can be used intra-articularly, put into joints to relieve inflammation in the soft tissues around the joint. It can be administered around other soft tissues like tendons or ligaments that may have strains. It's sometimes used by injection into the lower back to treat lower back muscle pain, and it can be, as we all know, used topically to treat dermatitis or skin disease.
When Bob Baffert made his announcement last Sunday, he stated Medina Spirit had tested positive for 21 picograms of betamethasone. Nobody can say that the sport of thoroughbred racing doesn't test to minuscule levels. What is a picogram, Doc?
Picogram is a measurement of weight, and when you think in terms of kilograms, that's 2.2 pounds, that's kilograms, 1,000 grams, 1,000 micrograms is a gram, 1,000 milligrams is a microgram, 1,000 nanograms is a milligram, and 1,000 picograms is a nanogram. So, orders of magnitude, below a gram. But remember, it is just a measurement of weight. It doesn't tell you anything about the substance, its potency, its effects, nothing. What you've got is you've weighed the substance, and this is how much it weighs.
Okay, so we've confirmed that these are minuscule levels, and betamethasone is a legal therapeutic medication. You just outlined the uses of the medication. However, would I be correct in saying, Doc, that the amount which a horse can have in his or her system on race day varies from state to state? Is that true?
There is some variability between states regarding the control of the use of betamethasone, yes. Some states, like Kentucky, regulate by a limit of detection, meaning it is not allowed to be present in any detectable concentration. Other states have a 10 picogram threshold.
Okay. So one of the debates that often comes up when talking about equine medication is the question of, is this a performance-enhancing drug? Can it make the horse run faster, for example? Can an excess amount of betamethasone in a horse's system, in this case 21 picograms, make the horse run faster, Doc?
I'm going to say no. It doesn't fit my definition of a performance-enhancing drug. The way you think of, you know, amphetamines, stimulants, blood doping, those sorts of things. It can make a horse that is uncomfortable feel better and, as a result, run better than it otherwise would if it were still having some level of discomfort. But in terms of performance enhancing, I really don't think it meets the criteria.
That's interesting. The working theory given for the overage by the Bob Baffert team this week was that a topical ointment was used to treat dermatitis and that ointment contained betamethasone. Is that a possibility?
It's certainly plausible. Betamethasone is contained in the ointment. The ointment is absorbed into the skin. We don't have any data in horses about how much is absorbed, what sorts of concentrations you'd expect to see following an administration. And even there, it can get kind of confusing and into the weeds pretty quickly. Is it absorbed differently by inflamed, irritated skin that has an enhanced blood supply? One would think so. So how large is the area that you're treating? How much medication are you applying? Are you applying it once a day, twice a day? So there are lots of variables to all of this, but certainly the medication is present in the product that they report using, and yes, the horse was exposed to betamethasone. That could be the reason that it was detected in the horse's sample.
Talking with Dr. Mary Scalay, the Executive Director and Chief Operating Officer of the Racing Medication and Testing Consortium, I guess it won't matter then, right, Doc? If the split sample now comes back to confirm the initial test, then it doesn't matter how it got there. It was in the horse's system. I'm assuming that the next steps would be the horse would be disqualified, but that would be up to the Racing Commission, I guess, right?
Right. According to the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission's rules, it is a mandatory disqualification. There is no ability to mitigate away from that. The trainer's penalty can be mitigated in consideration of the facts of the case, but according to Kentucky rules, the DQ would be mandatory.
Okay, so what are the next steps? Where do we go from here?
Well, split sample analysis needs to be conducted, and when those results are received, then the stewards will convene a hearing and issue a ruling. They're like, I believe, and I'm not sure, but there would almost be two different events there. One would be if the split comes back positive, they would issue a ruling disqualifying the horse, redistributing the purse. And then there's the matter of accountability for the trainer. That is typically a separate hearing, and oftentimes those events, there are stays requested by attorneys while there is discovery and information acquired. So I'm not sure on the timing of that.
You know, Doc, I know that this is your job and this is what you do, and it's your life's work and it's your passion, but do you ever get tired of answering questions about medication violations?
I'm going to say no because, you know, simply because there's so much lack of understanding out there, And I know it's a complex issue, and so we need to talk about it. You know, it would be my preference that there weren't medication violations. The vast majority of the ones that we deal with are mistakes and not, you know, not intentional, willful acts to manipulate the outcome of race. I mean, I've said this repeatedly throughout the week. Why would anybody choose to attempt to manipulate a horse with a medication that they know the labs can test for to very, very low concentrations, and they test every sample for it every day? I mean, it makes no sense that someone would say, well, you know, we'll have a shot with whatever, knowing that the labs test for it. And so your investigation, you know, typically heads into the how did this mistake get made. Now, mistakes still require accountability. I'm not saying because there's a lack of intent that the whole thing should be, a case should be dismissed, but it's certainly different, far different than an intent to alter the outcome of a race.
I know you. There's no way for you to know what's going to happen with the split sample, but what are the odds that the split sample comes back and does not confirm the initial test results?
I personally would be very surprised if the split did not confirm. The laboratory that did the primary work, Industrial Labs in Wheat Ridge, Colorado, they are very thorough, they are accurate, they are rigorous in their procedures, and they would not report a finding if it did not meet all the criteria for that. So I would be very surprised if it didn't confirm.
People from the outside looking in will, especially non-racing fans, will say, okay, this was caught after the race, after the horse won the Kentucky Derby. Why was there not testing done on every horse before the race, like Pimlico is now doing with the Baffert horses going into the Preakness Stakes? Is that something the sport now takes a closer look at?
Well, I think it may be open to discussion. You know, it sounds flippant to say the trainer's responsible for what's in the horse. And I understand that there were plenty of people who had tickets that they had to tear up, and they, you know, the race was declared official and this information comes out and they feel they were wronged. And I understand that, and I am not trying to make light of that at all. But I also think that if a trainer is using medication and is uncertain if his withdrawal is appropriate, that individual can request clearance testing. In Kentucky, it's done for free. All you have to do is report to the commission the medication that was given. Your vet can collect blood, urine, submit them to the lab, and the lab that runs the official testing for the Kentucky Horse Racing Commission will run that sample to tell you if your horse is cleared or not, and then you can make your decision. So is it the commission's responsibility or is it the trainer's responsibility to make sure that the horses are presented on race day in a medication-compliant situation?
I said all of the
Derby and Oaks horses were out-of-competition tested. The scope of testing prescribed by the Kentucky regulations has a list of banned substances that the lab tests for. Betamethasone is not a banned substance. We've discussed that it's a legitimate therapeutic medication, and so it is not part of the scope of testing for out-of-competition in Kentucky. I believe that here in Maryland, a special request was made to the lab to test for therapeutic medications as well as banned substance, and that may be the discussion going forward.
Okay, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I had said earlier that for the past, well, a couple of years, really, as we've talked about medication and eliminating race day medications and those types of things in our sport, and there are people on both sides of that issue that are very passionate, that this is one example. And horse racing over the generations of this sport has done a horrific job of policing itself. And a lot of people said, okay, we need federal oversight in order to make this happen and to go medication-free. But I stated earlier, Doc, that I think this is an example of the sport policing itself. You're testing down to, as you just outlined, a very minuscule level with picograms. If a trainer is found in violation, the horse will be disqualified. There will be punishments involved. My whole thing is that the punishments often have lack a lot of teeth, let's say. So it doesn't give the cheaters, if you will, and I'm not calling Bob Baffert a cheater by any stretch of the imagination, but it doesn't give those individuals much incentive not to try to get around the system. Is that true?
Well, I think you make a really good point that a penalty is meant to be a deterrent, so that somebody who would consider pushing the envelope or committing a violation would do the math, do their own risk-benefit analysis, and say, well, if I get caught, this is a big deal, and I don't think I want to have to face that. You know, so I think the penalty structure is one of the things that HISA will need to revisit in consideration of that. I mean, if a penalty becomes the cost of doing business, you really have not done anything but increase the cost of doing business.
Yeah, Dr. Mary Scalay here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, just fantastic. If you want to talk about medication and you want to talk about horse health, Dr. Mary Scalay is the ultimate source. And, Doc, I can't thank you enough for spending some time with me here this morning and outlining this for people. And I know we could spend another couple of hours talking about this situation as it pertains to the sport as a whole, but this was very informative and really appreciate you taking some time.
Well, thanks for having me. You have a good day, and let's have some good races this afternoon.
Absolutely. Good races, safe races. Amen to that. Dr. Mary Scalay here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Yeah, this is the sport policing itself. For those of you who are proponents of, oh, we need federal oversight, well, we're doing it. I mean, look at the process that's taking place. Now, again, the where we fall short and have always fallen short is the teeth that are involved with penalizing people. And again, I'm telling you, horse racing is not the only sport that deals with this. How many times do you turn on SportsCenter or you turn on a sports talk show and you hear them talking about an athlete that violated protocol that's been given another chance and another chance and another chance and another chance? And what the penalty was that was issued, the fine that was levied for an athlete that's making $8, $10, $12 million a year to be fined $100,000, $200,000. Here you go. Here's a check. That's not incentive to not make that move again. It's just not. So a lot of things to think about going forward, but you know, great stuff from Dr. Mary Scalay. My thanks to her. Still to come, you're going to hear from trainer Todd Pletcher. You're going to hear from Andrew Offerman talking about opening day at Canterbury Park. Yeah, there is racing taking place outside of Pimlico, believe it or not. He will talk about their opening day coming up this week. Unsung Heroes is still ahead, presented by Claiborne. I welcome Jose Hernandez, the longtime assistant trainer for Chad Brown. Just don't miss that segment. That's fantastic. Sean Clancy will be with me. Kurt Becker's stroll through racing history. And you're still going to hear from trainer Steve Asmussen and Chad Brown talking about their contenders coming up in the Preakness Stakes later today. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Proud to once again be your home for the Kentucky Derby and for the Triple Crown.
Tenda Equine and Pet Care products have been keeping world-class equine athletes happy and healthy for generations. Keep your equine athlete looking and performing well with Tenda Next Generation Wound and Skin Care Treatment. Along with nutritional supplements, leg and muscle care products, salves, hoof care, poultice, topical aids, and grooming products. Visit TendaHorse.com today.
Gainesway Stallion Taprit, a $1.2 million yearling at Saratoga. Taprit's victories include the Grade 1 Belmont Stakes.
And they're into the stretch. Irish War Cry turns for home with Taprit trying to run him down in the last furlong. The two of them are now a half length apart. They are clear of Gormley and Patch. It is Irish War Cry. And on the outside, Taprit. Taprit has taken the lead. Taprit and Irish War Cry come down to the line together. It is Taprit and Jose Ortiz in the Belmont Stakes.
In his first 2 years at stud, Taprit has bred over 240 mares. Now his first weanlings have arrived, selling for up to $100,000. One of the best bred sons of Sire Sires Taprit to ever enter stud. Classic winner and stakes record setter Taprit, standing at Gainesway.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at tonysteaksandseafood.com.
As the COVID-19 vaccines become available, you may be asking yourself, should I get it? Will it help me get back to doing the things I love, like meeting friends or traveling? And can I do it without putting my family at risk? You've got questions. That's normal. So visit getvaccineanswers.org for the latest information on the COVID-19 vaccines. Getting back to the moments we miss starts with getting informed. It's up to you. A message brought to you by the Ad Council and the CDC.
Hi, this is jockey Brian Hernandez. For me, there's no bigger thrill than crossing the finish line in front, and nobody captures the excitement of our sport like Horse Racing Radio Network. Each week, HRRN brings you exclusive talk shows, podcasts, and in-depth conversations with the biggest names in racing, jockeys, trainers, owners, and more. Plus, HRRN is committed to helping disabled riders through their support of the PDJF. So climb aboard a winner today by visiting horseracingradio.net.
Hi, this is jockey Rajiv Maharaj, and I love listening to my friends on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by FarmPaint.com.
The first thing, you know, that happened is we came over to the quarter horses, and we started winning a few races and so forth, and John Nehrud was kind enough to send us the Horse Codex, so we go to the Preakness. First time I've ever went to Classic, you know, and this cowboy comes over there with, you know, Codex and the Preakness, and nobody took us too serious, although that horse had a pretty good prep set, you know, out there on the West Coast, and we win the Preakness. First time ever. And I told Jeff, I said, hell, this is no big deal. I said, we're going to win a lot of these. I didn't realize it was going to take us 8 more years.
That's the coach, Hall of Famer Dwayne Lucas, talking about winning his first Preakness, his first Classic with Codex in 1980, and then having to wait for another one. He actually didn't have to wait 8 years. He only had to wait 5 because Tank's Prospect won the Preakness in 1985, and then, of course, Winning Colors came along to win the Kentucky Derby for him in 1988. Fantastic stuff from the coach. And I guess you come into a race like that, the Preakness, and here's Dwayne Lucas. What's he won, 6 Preakness stakes? He's just been unbelievable in this race. Can he pull another rabbit out of a hat today with Ram? Ram's 30-1 on the morning line. He's going to be a big long shot today. He's making his stakes debut. Has never run in a stakes race, but he's the son of Triple Crown winner American Pharoah. And if anybody can pull off a shocker in the Preakness today, why not Dwayne Lucas? We've seen him do it time after time after time in his career. And how great would that story be? It would be fantastic. Our poll question today, at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. And yes, you can always email the show with your responses, mike@horseracingradio.net. Are you cheering for Medina Spirit to win the Preakness? Yes or no? It's black and white. Either you are or you're not. And right now, 72% of you saying, nope, not cheering for him to win the Preakness today. Nobody wanting to answer these medication questions over the course of the next 3 weeks, because it will be the storyline leading into the Belmont. Are you cheering for Medina Spirit to win the Preakness Stakes? Let me know, at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Somebody replied and said, I would like to see him win, but I'm betting against, so couldn't root for him. Yeah, good point. There's another angle to it. Do you think that Derby effort took too much out of Medina Spirit? Does he bounce to the moon in the Preakness? And if he does, is it Concert Tour, his stablemate, who comes and sweeps by late and gets the money in the Preakness Stakes? Again, won't be a popular win because of the controversy surrounding Bob Baffert right now. but Concert Tour is a player. He's a major player in this race. You have to acknowledge that. There are others. Crowded Trade for Chad Brown. I think he's dangerous. What about Risk-Taking? He was one of the top Derby prospects earlier in the spring before he threw in that clunker in the wood head scratcher. Nobody can figure out why. What if he rebounds? Can he be the one standing in the winner's circle? Keep Me in Mind, Midnight Bourbon, a couple of horses returning from the Kentucky Derby. Can they turn the tables? And what about Unbridled Honor for Todd Pletcher? The Hall of Famer has never won the Preakness Stakes, the only classic race that Todd has never won. He learned from the best in D-Wayne Lucas, spent plenty of time working with D-Wayne, his son Jeff. Maybe Todd finally takes all of that Lucas magic and puts it to use for himself. Would be fantastic. It'd be a great story. Another very positive story for the sport if Todd Pletcher can win with Unbridled Honor. All right, when I come back, you're going to hear from the Hall of Fame trainer, the recently inducted, or will be inducted, but the recently newly minted Hall of Famer Todd Pletcher. That comes up to kick off hour number two. Andrew Offerman, the vice president of racing operations at Canterbury, part of the second hour of the show as well, and then Unsung Heroes presented by Claiborne. All of that still ahead right after I pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, this is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, with this week's HRRN Racing Update. A field of 10 is set to go to post in the 146th Preakness Stakes at 6:47 Eastern today at Pimlico Racecourse in Baltimore, Maryland, as Kentucky Derby winner Medina Spirit looks to claim the second jewel of the Triple Crown. After moving to the first week of October last year due to the pandemic, 1 month after the Kentucky Derby, the Preakness returns to its usual spot on the calendar this year, the third Saturday in May, just 2 weeks after the Run for the Roses. It figures to be a beautiful day at the Old Hilltop, with sunny skies and temperatures in the mid-70s forecasted. Attendance has been limited to just 10,000 fans due to continuing COVID-19 protocols. Happy Preakness, everyone. That's your HRRN Racing Update. Now let's send it back to host Mike Penna for Hour 2 of the Equine Forum.
Welcome back. Hour 2 of this 3-hour program rolling on. Happy Preakness Day. It is the Middle Jewel, the Triple Crown, coming up later today. Our coverage, 5 Eastern here on the network. You can tune in coast to coast and worldwide. Affiliates across the country, SiriusXM, satellite radio, and streaming worldwide at horseracingradio.net. Myself, Kurt Becker, and the voice of the UK Wildcats, Tom Leach, all together again to bring you that coverage from Old Hilltop later today. Going to be fun. Can't wait to be there. Can't wait to bring you that coverage later today. Again, 5 Eastern here on the network. You heard from Dr. Mary Scolay doing a fantastic job outlining the current situation surrounding Medina Spirit and Hall of Fame trainer Bob Baffert. You heard from trainer Mike McCarthy in the first hour of the program talking about his Preakness hopeful, his Preakness contender, who is Rombauer. Plenty more still to come, and hour two is loaded. It begins with my conversation with newly minted Hall of Famer Todd Pletcher, who is going to be this week's Industry Star of the Week. I couldn't think of anybody better than Todd Pletcher to bestow with that honor. Stuart Morris is the sponsor of this particular interview, and he offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation. He wants to thank his owners, his clients, and his team. He knows his success is because of you, and with multiple stakes horses over the past several years, including Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, Malagasy, South Bend, and recent 2021 stakes winners Pacific Gale and Nikki the Vest, Stuart Morris is absolutely your source for success at the highest levels. You can visit the Stuart Morris consignments at all of the upcoming major sales. Well, here it is, trainer Todd Pletcher talking about his Hall of Fame career and the Preakness Stakes.
It's actually really difficult to put into words, and you know, it means a great deal to me personally, to my entire team. So many people have contributed to this, and you know, so many associates, so many horses, so many owners, so many jockeys, you know, just, I mean, the list goes on and on. But, you know, when I first told my mom and she burst out into tears, it just, you know, kind of the reality hit. But, you know, this is really, really special and means so much to a lot of people. My mom used to ask me when I was a little kid always, you know, what do you think you want to do or be when you grow up? And I think, you know, when you're 6 or 7 or 8 or 10 years old, you know, your first thought is, oh, I want to be a doctor or I want to be a fireman or what have you. And I remember having the thought maybe even a little before I told her that, you know, I like what my dad's doing. I love going to the barn. And, you know, I think that's ultimately what I want to do. And so, but I never really said it until I think I was 11 or 12 and she asked me, and I was sort of like testing to see what her reaction was going to be. And you know, she was elated. She said, I think that would be terrific. And so once I kind of had her endorsement, you know, and obviously my dad was training at the time. And so I had his support and endorsement as well. And pretty much never looked back from there, never thought about doing anything else. And thankfully, because I probably wouldn't have been good at anything else. So, yeah, I mean, it's fortunate just to be, you know, have two parents that really cared about what I was going to do. And once I decided that, they did everything they could to help me get into a position to potentially succeed.
Talk about the impact that your dad had on you, not just as a young man, but as a horse trainer.
Well, yeah, I mean, he did very well. He was a successful trainer in the Midwest. He was a successful quarter horse trainer before that. So, you know, I think as a youngster, you know, I would try to go to the barn with him every weekend, and you know, any day I didn't have school, and you know, I think you go out there and you're learning, even though you're not really aware that you're learning. You're just sort of, you know, I was walking horses or helping feed, or, you know, just depending on how old I was, how much responsibility I could have. And maybe no one's, you know, directly teaching you per se, but you're just absorbing a lot of things and picking up a lot of things as you go along. So that I worked for him long enough that I kind of learned his system, but he also pointed me in the right direction. You know, when I got a little bit older, when I was 16, I spent a summer with Henry Marino, who's a good friend of my dad's and our family, and he's a very successful trainer in the Southern California circuit. So I spent a summer with him, and then I spent a summer with Wayne Lucas and another summer with Charlie Whittingham, and all of that was on, you know, my parents' advice of, you know, try to get out there and learn from some other people and see how they do things and try to absorb as much as you can and take with you as much as you can. And so those were not only great times, but great learning experiences.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned some of those folks too, because nobody gets to this particular level without being surrounded by good people and having good people to learn from. And I know that you're extremely busy with the day-to-day operations of your business, and this has only been out there for about 5 or 6 days now, the news of the Hall of Fame. But have you taken time over the past week or so to reflect on some of the people or most of the people who have helped you reach this amazing milestone?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, you know, kind of once I was a nominee, you know, start to reflect on a lot of that. And, you know, I've had some really nice calls and messages from friends and plenty of other people that I've worked with or have trained horses for. And it's been a really long list of congratulations from different people that were very, very supportive through, you know, helping get to this point. And so, you know, in some ways, you know, it's amazing how the Wayne Lucas trainer tree kind of continues to expand. And so I guess I'm getting old enough now that I have a bit of at least a branch of my own. But, you know, it all kind of comes back to a lot of guys that have worked for Wayne or have been associated with that program in some way.
I can remember sitting down with Wayne at Saratoga a few years back for this particular show, and Jude Feld and I spent an hour sitting in his office with him talking about his life and his career. But when he talked about all of his assistants that have gone out and made a mark on this sport, he's almost like a proud father when he talks about you and Kieran and Mark Henning and people like that that have done so well. How do you describe Wayne Lucas and the impact that he had on your overall career?
Well, you know, I was so fortunate the way things fell into place when I was a senior in college at the University of Arizona. I think sometime around January or so, I went out to Santa Anita and met with Wayne and told him, you know, that I'd like to get a work for him. And when I graduated college, and so we kind of had a somewhat of an informal interview, and he said, you know, you can count on the job when you graduate. Just call me when you graduate, and we'll figure it out then. So, you know, I called him and told him I was, you know, ready to go to work, and he said, okay, why don't you go to Belmont and you can work for my son Jeff there. And I oftentimes think, like, what would have happened if he would have sent me in a different direction or said go to California or go to Arlington or whatever. You know, there's probably a number of different ways it could have fallen, but to work out that way and to get to go to New York and to get to work for Jeff was just, you know, it was a tremendous break for me, because I can't think of anyone who's had more of an influence on my career than Jeff, in terms of he was just such a great coach, and he was a strict disciplinarian. He wanted things done a certain way, and you had to make sure those things were done the right way, or he was going to call you out on it. It just, you hear a lot of times athletes will say, you know, a particular player brings out the best in another player. And I think Jeff had that ability to bring out the best in people that worked for him. And you know, Wayne was a huge part of that. And he was, and later on, after Jeff had his unfortunate accident, I spent a lot more time working with Wayne. But, you know, that first, like, 3 years or so was really heavily influenced by Jeff during 6 months of the year. And then Kieran McLaughlin was the main assistant during the other 6 months of the year at Belmont. So, I mean, I got to work under two guys that had, you know, they were tremendous horsemen, also had different types of personalities. And so I was able to learn from Kieran, who is just such a great people person. And he the way he communicated with Wayne and Jeff and the owners, I just tried to pick up on, you know, whatever I could from those guys. And so, like I said, I was fortunate to fall into a great situation.
We're still about 3 months or so away from the actual Hall of Fame inductions in Saratoga Springs. Have you started to formulate any thoughts or jot down any notes as to what you might want to include in your speech when you stand up there?
Yeah, I have. I've thought about it. And the one thing that I've tried to learn over the years, and being fortunate enough to have some Eclipse Award speeches over the years, the one thing that you always fear is leaving someone out. And, you know, so the one thing that concerns me is there's just no way that I can thank everyone who deserves to be appreciated during, you know, a speech that I think is supposed to last, you know, maybe 5 minutes or so. Trying to figure out how to balance that out, and certainly want to, you know, thank the people like Jeff who are not here and I can't thank in person. But, you know, I also want to make sure everyone who deserves recognition gets it, and certainly don't want to leave anyone out. So I'm trying to determine how to balance that out. And I think one way is to try to thank a lot of the people in person that I have the opportunity to do so.
You saddled your first winner in January of 1996. That was at Gulfstream Park, a horse by the name of Majestic Number. There have been so many top name horses and big wins since that moment. I asked you about the people that you're going to have to try to remember when you put together your speech. How about the horses when you think back on your career that are always going to stand out to you?
Yeah, I mean, I said this last week when they were asking me. I mean, there's so many horses, so many big races, so many big moments, but I really felt like the two horses that helped get my career going more so than any others were More Than Ready and Jersey Girl. And, you know, More Than Ready was sort of the first horse that we had that was a graded stake horse. He was a brilliant two-year-old, you know, he grabbed headlines, and so I think that really helped. And then Jersey Girl was our first grade one winner and you know, kind of showed that we could compete at the highest level. So I always felt like those two really got our career going. So they were special. And, you know, I've always said that Rags to Riches winning the Belmont is still my favorite win. It was just such an exciting race, literally everything that can happen in a race, from the stumble at the start to the stretch long duel, and for a filly to you know, defeat a horse of Curlin's ability level in a classic race and be our first classic win. And just, you know, there's so many emotions that went through during that mile and a half race that it's just so exciting. And I was really, really hoping I was hoping she would have been inducted into the Hall of Fame already, but when she'd kind of been skipped over for a few years, I thought it would be fitting if maybe she'd get enough votes this year. But I'm still hopeful that she'll eventually get in. I certainly think she deserves it.
So if I were to walk into Todd Pletcher's house, and I'm always curious with somebody like yourself, Todd, that's won so many big races, been around so many good horses, what are some of the things that I'm going to see from a memorabilia standpoint, maybe some of your most prized possessions, if you will?
Yeah, I mean, I think most of it is trophies and win photos. You know, I know that sometimes people will come over and they'll look and say, you know, why do you have all these older photos up when you have newer wins? And to me, it's like the ones back then are the ones that you want to go back and look at, you know, that are 20 years ago or 25 years ago. But yeah, and then we have a painting in our dining room that the Ackerley brothers had made for Mike Smith and I of Jersey Girl. I love that painting, and it's a really well done and captures how beautiful a filly she was. And then in our Saratoga dining room, we actually call that the Jim Dandy dining room, because I think we have 7 wins in the Jim Dandy, and all of those win photos are in there. So, yeah, just, you know, I think your traditional memorabilia of trophies and win photos and a few paintings. And also in that dining room, we have it's a really lovely photo of Keisha Electronica, and it's just a headshot, but it was really cool that the angle he was, just the way he's standing. And you know, so he a horse like that is one that probably wouldn't make most people's list of the best horses that we've had, but in some ways, you know, we really enjoyed having that horse, and you know, what he was able to accomplish after we claimed him was a lot of fun for us.
Let's talk about a race that you have yet to win, because this is Preakness week, and the one Triple Crown race that's eluded you is the Preakness. What makes the Middle Jewel so tricky and so difficult to claim?
Well, you know, I think we've obviously taken a lot of shots in the Derby, and you know, some of them long shots, but we've also been pretty conservative when it comes to turning those horses around in 2 weeks for the Preakness. And I think it's one of the reasons why we've had pretty good success in the Belmont. I think with 3 wins and 6 seconds, and most of those horses, you know, ran in the Derby, and then we just kind of focused on the Belmont. And, you know, Belmont Park is home for us, and it's, to me, you know, aside from the Derby and maybe some Breeders' Cup races, it's one of my favorite races, and I love preparing for it. I love the mile and a half challenge of it. And so I think, not to slight the Preakness, it's not one that we've really, really focused on, especially with Belmont being, you know, our home track and where we live and where the kids grew up. And, you know, it's kind of a coveted race for our family.
Why can Unbridled Honor win the Preakness on Saturday?
Well, I think Unbridled Honor could win the Preakness if he gets a favorable pace setup. And, you know, he's a horse that doesn't get involved really early on, but he has a good closing kick. If they'll go fast enough and come back to him a little bit, I think he will handle the mile in 3/16, and he will be finishing up well. So he needs to get a fortunate trip, and he needs to get some pace to run at. I liked his last work at Churchill before we came to New York. He worked in company with Promise Keeper, who was able to win the Peter Pan, and he was very strong in that work. So hopefully that's.
Yeah, trainer Todd Pletcher, sorry to cut him off there at the end, but you heard him talking about Unbridled Honor. If you want to hear more from Todd Pletcher about his life and his career, I spent a full 30 minutes with him on my Trainer Talk program, which is presented by Fasig Tipton. That interview and that show is podcast on our website right now at horseracingradio.net. So after I finish up here at 11 a.m., head back over and treat yourself to a really classy, very positive and uplifting conversation with Todd Pletcher. That little excerpt you just heard for about 15 minutes or so, uplifting in its own right. There's a guy, Todd Pletcher. You heard him talk very candidly about the fact that his horses, they point for the Kentucky Derby. His home track is Belmont Park. They point for the Belmont Stakes. Typically, the Preakness gets lost in the shuffle for them with his program. Now, he does have Unbridled Honor, but he's going to be loaded for the Belmont. He may have, what, 4, 5 horses for the Belmont? Whatever that number is going to be, Todd will have a major presence 3 weeks from today in Elmont, New York. And my thanks to Todd for taking time to do that on a very, very busy week. When I come back, we'll turn our attention to Minnesota. Don't get a chance to talk about Canterbury Park on the program as much as I would like, but we're going to do it next with Vice President of Racing Operations, Andrew Offerman. This is the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com on HRRN.
A 5-time graded stakes winning earner of almost $3 million, Airdrie Studs Collected is the all-time leading earner by City Zip. Winner of the Grade 1 Pacific Classic over Arrowgate, Collected also romped by 14 lengths in the Grade 3 Precisionist Stakes, defeating Accelerate. Collected bred full books of quality mares in his first 2 seasons, and his first crop yearlings will be unveiled at public auction later this summer. Collected stands at Airdrie Stud for 17,500 stands and nurses. Think about it.
Broken Vow, a top 15 lifetime active sire with over 170 black type horses, 90 black type winners, and approaching $80 million in progeny earnings. In 2020, Broken Vow produced Saratoga Springs winner Stan the Man and the Speedy M. Primus, winner of the $700,000 turf sprint. Juvenile stakes horses include the Grass is Blue and Chasing Kara. Give your mare a great start with a proven sire. Broken Vow, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
This prolific son of AP Indy has sired over 50 stakes winners and over 100 stakes horses. Recent stars include Eclipse champion West Coast, Sovereign Award winner Avi's Flatter, and UAE 2000 Guineas winner Mohib, plus these recent standout performers. His yearlings topped the Fasig Tipton July sale 2 years in a row, and juveniles brought up to $600,000. Success on the track, success in the ring. Flatter, standing at Claiborne Farm.
The Spring Meet is back at Churchill Downs with live racing now through June 26th.
New for this year's meet will be the Stephen Foster Preview Day on May 29th with 7 stakes races as we gear up for the June 26th Stephen Foster. And don't forget, new this year, Stephen Foster Day has moved to a daytime card with 7 total stakes races that include the Breeders' Cup Winning You're In Fleur-de-Lis for the Distaff Division and the Stephen Foster for the Classic Division. With strong purses throughout the meet, you're not going to want to miss the spring meet at Churchill Downs. Get your tickets today at churchilldowns.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
This is Chris Landeros. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by FarmPaint.com.
Plain Talk may be in deep water, and Jealous Warrior on the wide side. Creative Plan between them, and sneaking through on the inside is Summer Assault. What a great move by Loveberry. Summer Assault, inside Gold Shadow Roll. We have four abreast for $100,000 in the Mystic Lake Derby. And Jealous Warrior, Bayou Prospector late, but Summer Assault has taken the prize. What a great ride by Gareth Loveberry. Summer Assault is the Mystic Lake Derby champion.
Signature call for Paul Allen, longtime announcer at Canterbury Park in Minnesota. Summer Assault winning the Mystic Lake Derby last year. That is one of the highlights of the meet, which begins this coming Tuesday, May 18th, runs all the way through September 16th, the 65-day thoroughbred and quarter horse meet. Always features a lot of excitement, great betting opportunities, and to tell you more about that now is Andrew Offerman, the Vice President of Racing Operations at Canterbury. Andrew, good morning, my friend.
Morning, Mike. How are you?
I'm doing really well. How about yourself? You're a few days away from opening day. Maybe some opening day excitement, jitters. What's it like up there?
Yeah, absolutely. We've been accepting horses now for the last 3 or so weeks, and the track's been full of activity here the last 14 or so days with everybody getting ready for kind of our fun summer season up here. Obviously, when the weather starts to get warm and horses make it back to the racetrack, everybody gets excited for the summer meet at Canterbury.
Let's start by talking about the gentleman that we just heard calling the Mystic Lake Derby last year. He has done that for several years. He is Paul Allen. How blessed are you guys to have an announcer of his caliber in Minnesota?
Yeah, unbelievably blessed. He came here in 1995 when the track reopened after a couple of years of closure under new management, and really brought a unique style and sense of energy, something that our fans really resonate with. And obviously, as his career kind of continued to blossom and his involvement with the Minnesota Vikings and being the radio voice of the Vikings kind of brought our track to kind of a different profile amongst sports fans in the region. And, man, just listening to him, you know, do his job 65 days of summer is a real treat. He brings a unique passion for the game and kind of a unique level of excitement. And kind of more than anything, he doesn't take himself too seriously and lets himself have some fun and do some unique things that I think are unique that the fans really appreciate. So we're quite fortunate he brings a unique brand and a unique flavor to our racing every year.
So many people looking forward to hearing his calls kicking off on Tuesday with opening day. It's going to be a great meet. I mean, the purse structure, the wagering opportunities, all of that very, very positive. Tell me more about what folks can expect at this Canterbury meet.
Sure. It's going to be an exciting year. We're trying to build off some of the success and the momentum that we generated last year when we switched our schedule. You know, obviously, we're a track that in the past has really benefited from a strong on-track audience. And in the midst of a pandemic, we had to kind of reinvent ourselves and run a weekday schedule, kind of a unique time slot. But I think that doing that exposed our product, a unique kind of brand of racing in the Midwest that features not only good racing with good fields, but also very competitive turf racing to maybe a new audience. And we're excited to continue to develop that with a schedule that, you know, really we hope kind of fits the needs of both horse players as well as their on-track customers. So we'll be running Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays with a 5 p.m. Central First Post, as well as Sunday afternoons at 1 p.m., trying to kind of bring some of our on-track promotions back to make it a special place for our on-track audience, but recognizing the support we got from the national audience with the midweek kind of late afternoon, early evening post time, and trying to kind of deliver on some of the things that we were able to be successful with last year in terms of unique wagering formats and some exciting racing at kind of a unique time of the week.
Yeah, you really did have to be creative last year, Andrew, and not just you, but so many people in the sport. And by the way, we're very lucky that the sport of thoroughbred racing was one of, if not the only major sport that continued to operate during the pandemic. And I think we were benefited by the fact that the game is played outdoors, which helped an awful lot. But talk about some of the things outside of the schedule, the weekday programming schedule, some of the other things that you had to adapt to and you had to learn as you walked through the pandemic at Canterbury Park last year.
Sure. Yeah, as you mentioned, there were, you know, a lot of changes. I think that the fact that we were an outdoor event did help us, at least from a political standpoint here, make sure that we get the meet up and running. You know, one of the biggest challenges for us right at the beginning is that obviously we're located, you know, quite a ways away from where most of our horses spend the winter. We're unique in that we draw kind of horses across the southern part of the country up here in the summer. So making sure that we got some sense of certainty that we were going to be able to race was important, and kind of reaffirms that some of the work that needs to be done and that we continue to do to make sure that people understand kind of the unique economic engine that horse racing provides to not only the local but also the state economy here in the state of Minnesota. And then I think that really the lessons that took away from it were largely, you know, revolved around kind of what can be done remotely, what can be done through kind of a, you know, not in-person business, and kind of transitioning the way that we do things to rely more on technology and less on maybe person-to-person contact. I think that, you know, there's a lot of industries that have, you know, obviously adapted quite a bit over the course of the pandemic. But when I look at, you know, kind of racing's transition, I think that there were a lot of things that that we've all learned from this that, you know, probably don't ever go back to the way that they used to be. And I think that that's probably a good thing in a sport that sometimes gets a little too caught up in tradition and the way things always have been.
Great point. Talking with Andrew Offerman, the Vice President of Racing Operations at Canterbury Park here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I referenced that call of last year's Mystic Lake Derby, Summer Assault getting the victory. That is one of the signature races of this meet, but there are so many others. What are some of the events that always stand out to you and the race days that always stand out to you, Andrew?
Sure. You know, the things that I think historically are on people's radar, as you mentioned, are Mystic Lake Derby Day, which this year will be Wednesday, June 23rd, which features five turf stakes races, and that's clearly our most high-profile event. But the other day that probably sticks out to us more so in the Midwest is Minnesota Festival of Champions, which this year is on September 8th, Wednesday, September 8th, which features all of our best state-bred competitors going head-to-head with one another. You know, unique this year, we really tried to kind of build off of the idea of creating kind of a signature event. So throughout the course of the meet, we've got a Wednesday or a Thursday each month that will kind of focus our stakes racing action. So that kicks off on Thursday, May 27th, where we'll have a preview day for that Mystic Lake Derby Day. As I mentioned, June 23rd will be our feature day of the meet with five turf stakes, including the Mystic Lake Derby and Mystic Lake Mile. July 14th is a day that's considered a little bit new and unique this year. It'll be called Hall of Fame Day, where we'll induct this year's class of the Minnesota Racing Hall of Fame, as well as feature a couple of preps for a couple of important Minnesota stakes races later in the meet. Then August 18th is a day that features the Minnesota Oaks and Derby for the best Minnesota breds in the state. And then, obviously, as I mentioned, September 8th is kind of Minnesota Festival of Champions Day. So one key day throughout the course of the entire meet, or each month of the entire meet, rather, that tries to focus kind of our best racing on a singular event.
You know, I introduce you as Vice President of Racing Operations because that is your official title, but you obviously weren't always in that position. Where did the love of horse racing begin for Andrew Offerman?
It's a fun question. My family has been involved in horse racing in the state of Minnesota since inception. My family actually registered the first Minnesota bred horse in the state of Minnesota when the racing industry was first founded in the early and mid 80s.
No
so
kidding.
I've been fortunate enough to first come out to Canterbury Park when it was under new ownership as a fan, as a little 2-year-old fan, and then really grow up here. over the course of my life, working in a whole bunch of different positions from interns all the way up to where I am now. So had the fortune of going to the racetrack industry program at Arizona, spending some time out in New York as a part of that experience. But the majority of my career, I've been very lucky to be able to work in this industry, but do so, 15 miles from where I grew up.
So you're all in. Your family's all in Minnesota through and through.
100%.
That's fantastic. I didn't know that about your parents. That's pretty cool.
For sure. Yeah, we've had a unique tie to the equine industry here, even prior to the racing business. The first horse that actually ended up getting registered in the state here ended up to be something that wasn't even originally intended. It was a horse that was actually traded to pay off of a debt for some past due boarding bills. So the story of the first Minnesota bred horse and the fact that my family ended up registering it was not by design, but has certainly led to some exciting memories and great moments over the course of our involvement in the sport.
Yeah, that's fantastic, Andrew. I had no idea that that was, that's how everything got started in Minnesota. Where is the program today, the Minnesota bred breeding program?
Sure, it's obviously kind of gone through a unique course of history when you look at the fact that the original racetrack here was built in 1985 and had closed by 1992. After that time period and new ownership had come in the mid-90s, the industry's really kind of rebounded and stabilized. I think that over the last several years, you've kind of seen a trend similar to the rest of the country in that I think that there is a need in the middle market. That's kind of where the numbers have dropped off. But in terms of overall competitiveness and quality of the horse that's being bred in Minnesota, I don't think it's ever been better. We've seen graded stakes winners come out of Minnesota in the last 12 months, which is something that you never used to see. And even when you just look at our opening night race card and the fact that you've got maiden special weight races with multiple horses that have been running speed figures in the 70s that are still maidens, I think that speaks to the quality of the program, maybe compared to previous years.
Well, Andrew, listen, it's going to be a fun meet. Again, it begins on Tuesday. That's May 18th, runs all the way through September 16th. Should be a lot of fun. We can't wait to tune in and listen to Paul Allen and see the great program that you and your team have put together. Keep up the wonderful work, and we'll talk again during the meet, my friend.
Yeah, it's awesome. I appreciate the time, Mike. Thank you very much.
All right, Andrew Offerman here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. When I come back, do not leave your radio, because when I come back, it is time for this week's edition of Unsung Heroes, presented by Claiborne. This is the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com on HRN.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at FarmPaint.com. That's FarmPaint.com.
Hey, horse players, it's Paul Allen, radio voice of the Purple and track announcer at Canterbury Park. In 2020, Canterbury introduced a 10% takeout pick five, the best value in racing. This year, in addition to the nation's lowest takeout pick five, Canterbury is introducing an all-new $1 10% takeout pick six. No jackpots, no gimmicks. Watch and wager on Canterbury Park all summer. Racing runs Tuesday through Thursday at 5 p.m. Central and Sundays at 1. CanterburyPark.com. Come play.
Hey everyone, it's the Baron with this week's North of the Border report, presented by Woodbine Entertainment. In this week's report, trainer Katerina Vasileva gives the inside track on her promising 3-year-old Jilly Marie, and jockey Justin Stein talks about his 2021 goals. Jilly Marie is 30-1 in the Queen's Plate Winter Book, and trainer Katerina Vasileva said the daughter of Dynamic Sky showed early on she could be special. I think I knew that she was a talented horse when I started working her at Woodbine, said Vasileva. Whenever I put her in company with another horse, she always showed a competitive nature. She always tried to stick a neck in front or was more game than the others. Even if it wasn't a brilliant time, she always did her breezes very easily. And when asked about Jilly Marie's dazzling debut, Vasileva said, after her first race, the things I thought I was seeing in her in the morning were justified. She won pretty easily, and she was very professional in how she handled the race. In other Woodbine news, jockey Justin Stein will be hoping his momentum from a strong 2020 season carries over into the upcoming meet after riding for top trainers Kevin and Sid Attard last year. Stein credits his winning mindset as the key to his success, saying, "It was my approach to my job and the passion I was able to put into it. The ability to focus and to be in that moment is so huge. I'm very content. You never know what could have happened if the season had kept going. I'm better prepared for that goal of being leading rider, to get that title. It's something I strived for all of last year and something I'm striving for this year." Keep up the positive thoughts, Justin. And that's your North of the Border report presented by Woodbine for this Saturday morning. For more updates and racing information, visit woodbine.com or follow along on Twitter at WoodbineTB.
This is Greg Foley, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by FarmPaint.com.
Heroes in the world of sports are not uncommon. Oftentimes, thrusting themselves into the limelight through unimaginable feats.
Back behind the ball, Woods puts it.
And in! He has done it! Tiger is back! Tiger is back on top! Tiger Woods, the 2019 Masters Champion!
And breathtaking performances.
Here's how you count to 8, 3, 2, 1. And for the 8th time, college basketball's national championship trophy is coming home to Kentucky.
But behind every great hero, there are others. Individuals who play a crucial role in the achievements of those we read about in the headlines. The ultimate team players. Content to stand behind the curtain, embracing their place as a vital part of a sport's success. In horse racing, these are the unsung heroes.
Well, I tell you every time that open plays that horse racing is filled with unsung heroes, the people who work tirelessly behind the scenes and rarely get the recognition. Well, that changes with this particular unsung hero segment on Equine Forum again this morning, because I recognize one of those individuals who has had an impact on our sport more than you know. He is assistant trainer Jose Hernandez, who has worked with multiple Eclipse Award winning trainer Chad Brown since 2008. Do you think he's been around a few good horses? I'm pretty sure he has, and he's with me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Jose, first of all, congratulations on being this week's unsung hero, and congratulations on all of your success.
Well, thank you very much. I'm an assistant with Chad Brown. My name is Jose Hernandez. I'll be around with really, really nice horses, and I'm really successful in my position with my boss. He's a real good trainer, Chad Brown, so I've been really, like, enjoy this game, and I'm really proud of what I am, like, in my position. I've been around, many, many years, like, in the horse business, so I really enjoy what I do. I like the horses really, really much, so, and my boss is a really nice guy, really nice trainer, so I really enjoy what I do.
To work for somebody for so long, since 2008, you have to have a like for each other, and you have to have a respect for each other. And I know Chad respects you, because I reached out to him and asked him if there was anybody on his team that he thought deserved to be an unsung hero, and he immediately sent me your number, Jose. So it has to be a great relationship.
Yes. Like I say, I started in 2008, like, as a foreman, and then he gave me the opportunity, like, to start, like, an assistant trainer. And I take him, and then after that, it's really, really fun and good. It's kind of those things, like, you got to step up. If you're going to be, like, a groom or whatever, but I want to step up, like, in the season trainer. And my job is unbelievable. It's something that I like to be all the time. It's my dream. Like, it's dream come true for me, too. It's like I always been want this position, so it's really nice to say thank you for my boss, because it gave me the opportunity to step up. So it's good, because I always grew up in my country with the horses and everything. But this kind of a situation here, like this job, it's really impressive. Like, I like what I do, so it's really, really nice for this kind of job that I have.
You were born and raised in Mexico. How did you first get interested in working with horses, Jose?
I started in 1999, I started with Jimmy Bond. And then after that, in 2000, I started with Todd Pletcher, like as a foreman. And then after that, I go with John Ward, like as a foreman. Mm-hmm. And after John Ward, I moved to Chad Brown. So it was really interesting. But I still, like I say, I started with Todd. I started with Wayne Lucas, like as a groom. But I moved with Chad, like as a foreman. And then he moved me up. He put me in the position to be an assistant trainer. I enjoy what I do.
Did you work with horses in Mexico before you came to the United States?
Yeah, I worked with the horses in Mexico, but not like this kind of horses. I like quarter horses, and it's a farm, but not like this kind of horses. Like it's different. In Mexico is different, like quarter horses or show horses. But I work with the horses in Mexico too, but not this type of horses that we have now here. Like it never worked with the thoroughbred, but it's different.
Every trainer, Jose, will tell you that they can't be successful without having the help of good people that work with them. And obviously, you've been part of Chad's success for a long time, and that's been a lot of success, too. There's been a lot of really good horses since 2008. Describe for people what your job is. What's an assistant trainer do?
Well, an assistant trainer around, it's really difficult, especially with the help. I mean, you got to be respectful of the help you got to like you. Everything is around here in the horse business. I mean, the horses is first, the help is second, and then after that, you got to enjoy what you do. But everything is coming around. Like, I mean, horse business is like tough right now, the last past two years, because the situation, the COVID-19, whatever, but now it's really, really difficult to work with the horses because nobody want to work because of COVID. But now, before that, you got to work with the health. If you don't work with the health, the people don't want to work with you. So you got to be around with the health, too. The people, you got to like you, too. So I really appreciate all my help that we have the past, like, 10 years, 12 years. It's almost the same people. It's really nice to get the same people every time, but you have to have the help, too.
Talking with Jose Hernandez, this week's unsung hero, presented by Claiborne. He has been the assistant trainer to champion Chad Brown since 2008, and you heard him say that he loves it. He loves this job. He loves being around the horses. Jose, what do you think you like most about being an assistant trainer?
Everything. I mean, everything. To be in this position with this kind of man, he's the number one in the world. So it's really fun, really. I mean, it's hard to work. It's a hard work, but it's really fun. I like it. Everything, like I say, this is my job. This is what I like. This is what I like to be every year. I hope next maybe 10 years more, whatever happens, but I love it. So it's really a nice job. I mean, it's good. I like, and I respect my boss. So,
what do you think you might be doing if you weren't working with horses?
I don't know. I think I'm born, and like, I don't know, like I'm born in Mexico, but I still, like, say, I don't think I do another job besides this, because this, I think this is my dream before. So I don't think I got another job. I don't know, but this is my dream. This is what I am. This is what I want to do. And so I think it is nothing to do. Nothing to say to after that.
Your love for the sport comes through when you talk, your enthusiasm, the way
yes.
that you talk about Chad Brown. And tell me about some of the horses that have you been around over the years that you're always going to remember.
Well, it's so many too I remember, because when I used to be working for Pat, it's so many horses that I remember, like Modern Ready, Left Bank, so many. There's so many horses around in my life he got 22 years in the sport, and so many coming around more and more. So that I never forget was like when I used to be work for Jimmy Bone Barons. He one of the top horses in the country. This is one of my first horses that I'd be around. So Will's Way, Fusa AC Pegasus, so many.
Wow. Those are some big names in our sport, and you've had the chance to be around all of them. How about when I say names like Good Magic and Cloud Computing and Bricks and Mortar and horses like that?
Oh, okay. So the last few years ago, so my favorite is Lady Eli, and Good Magic was second. But my name, my best horse I'd be around, it was Bricks and Mortar. He was one of the best ones horses that we are around. Like, I go wherever he go, I go with him. So he was one of the first ones, like a special horse that I always never want to forget.
It's interesting, Jose, because trainers will tell me when they come on the show that the horses become like their kids, and they teach them, and they see them grow up, and they see them do well, and it's like watching your child. Is it like that for the assistant trainer, too? Are they like your kids?
It's like a child. It's like the trainer is the trainer, but the grooms and the foremen or the assistant trainers, hard workers, everything's coming together because you got to be prepared for one horse. If one horse you don't like, one guy or one groom, you got to put a different guy with a horse they like him. So it's like a child. You know him 24-7, like a... if he's okay in the stall, or if he eats good, you see him every day. So if he's not all right, so you want to know right away. So like you say, he's like a child to you.
Yeah. Is anyone else in your family involved in horse racing?
Yeah. I got a brother with me working with Chad now. He's my brother. He's working with Chad like 3 years already. And my sister worked 3 years. And I got a... You know, the sister working for your Weaver, all coming like a family working with the horses. That's what they do. That's what we do.
Well, it's a wonderful thing, and it's got to be great to do it with your family. It's a wonderful sport, and Jose, you are so positive, and this has been such a delight to hear your story. One more question before I let you go. Crowded trade and risk-taking. Do one of those two horses win the Preakness Stakes?
I like both. They've been training really well the last past 3 days. So I'm not surprised one of the two wins. But Crowd Trade, he's been training really well. Risk Taking is like training well. I'm not disappointed in the last race, but I'm not surprised if he can be 1-2. But the other horse, Crowd Trade, he's been training so well. So I don't know. It's a tough race. But I'm really, concerned they can be right there. 1-2, both.
Jose Hernandez, this week's unsung hero, well-deserving. His whole family really deserves to be in this segment. I'm glad we got a chance to mention them. Jose, thank you so much, and congratulations on being this week's unsung hero. Good luck in the Preakness.
Thank you very much.
All right, and I'll be back right after this word from Claiborne Farm.
Ironicus. This graded stakes-winning millionaire defeated over 20 Grade 1 winners. A Grade 2 winner and course record setter at Saratoga. He won 3 graded stakes and was runner-up in multiple Grade 1 events. Top runners include graded stakes winner Helium.
Repels the challenge. It's Helium in a huge effort.
The leading money earner at stud for emerging Sire of Sires distorted humor, Ironicus, standing at Claiborne Farm.
What a visit. It is such a privilege to be able to bring you those types of stories. And I tell you all the time that our sport is filled with unsung heroes like Jose. If you know somebody that you feel should be recognized as an unsung hero in our sport, nominate them today by emailing their story directly to me. That's mike@horseracingradio.net, and I will do my best to recognize them during these segments in the weeks and the months ahead. And my thanks to Claiborne for their support of those unsung hero segments as well. I'm back to get you ready for the third hour of the program.
right after this on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Proud to once again be your home for the Triple Crown.
Kirkwood Stables has a long and storied history of producing and selling winners at the highest level.
Here comes the line. Plum Pretty wins the Oaks.
Colfront wins it for the U.S.
From dead last to first, Tom's ready in the Woody Stevens.
But in the slot, it's Funny Duck by three.
Mucho Gusto in the Pegasus World Cup.
Big move by Chess Chief on the far outside. Here's Chess Chief.
Kirkwood Stables, proven success. Visit KirkwoodStables.com. The National HBPA is continuously working to protect the health and welfare of horses by advocating and funding research to help reduce equine injuries, lobbying for a national testing lab to oversee and establish absolute uniform laboratory protocols, advocating for every track to undergo an annual independent surface assessment, passionately supporting off-the-track thoroughbred retirement facilities and adoption groups, and so much more. See additional HBPA initiatives at nationalhbpa.com.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day-Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I think the advice I would give is you don't need to know all the answers. The craziest thing was believing that your dad knew everything. So as a dad, you felt like you had to know everything. You had to get everything right. It's okay to make mistakes. As long as it's coming from love, then, you know, it kind of starts to work itself out. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
So I could play sports and see my friends without having to worry about anything.
I'm ready for concerts to be back and just have a life again.
So I can actually eat pizza at my favorite pizza place.
Because I'm ready to travel again.
So that I can sit on the couch, read my granddaughter books, and hug her when there's a happy ending.
We each have our own reason for why we're getting vaccinated against COVID-19. What will yours be? Visit GetVaccineAnswers.org for information on the COVID-19 vaccines. It's up to you. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hi, this is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, reminding you that Race Day, presented by Twin Spires, comes to you every Wednesday through Friday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern here on HRRN. Bobby Newman joins me for racing from tracks like Churchill Downs, Belmont Park, and Santa Anita. We'll also bring you interviews with all of the players, both big and small, in thoroughbred racing. You can tune in to Race Day, presented by Twin Spires, on Sirius 219, XM 201, or stream it live on your home for all of racing's biggest events at horseracingradio.net.
This is jockey Julien Lepau, and you're listening to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by FarmPaint.com.
Well, so many of you have heard me telling you for the past several months about the new outdoor superstore, the Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky. And as you know, I have spent my entire life pursuing a few passions. Number one, horse racing. Number two, the Pittsburgh Steelers. And number three is the outdoors. And if I'm not in Heinz Field, if I'm not watching the Steeler game, if I'm not at a racetrack or on the air, there's a good bet I'm out on the farm somewhere. So trust me when I tell you that if you do love hunting, if you do love fishing, you need to check out the Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore. It's in Nicholasville, Kentucky, just 3 miles south of the Fayette Mall on Nicholasville Road. Owned, by the way, by former horse trainer Tevis McCauley. And the Elite Outdoor Superstore has everything that you would possibly need for hunting deer, turkey, ducks, and so much more. They even have two indoor archery ranges. So go see them today. The Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore. Boy, it's been a busy show so far, hasn't it? I hope you've enjoyed the first 2 hours. Hour three is going to be busy, too. I'm going to tell you more about that coming up in just a minute. But if you missed any portion of the first couple of hours, my interview with Mike McCarthy talking about Rombauer and the Preakness today, Dr. Mary Scalay was fantastic talking about the situation surrounding Medina Spirit and Hall of Famer Bob Baffert. Todd Pletcher, you heard from him. You heard from Andrew Offerman talking about Canterbury Park. And then, of course, Unsung Heroes, presented by Claiborne a short time ago with Jose Hernandez. And those segments are always
so amazing to do. I love putting the spotlight on the individuals in our sport that work so hard behind the scenes. Well, that's going to do it for the first couple of hours of the Equine Forum this morning, but still plenty more to come. Hour three begins with this week's edition of In the Room with Sean Clancy. A bit different today, though. In honor of the Preakness Stakes, Sean is going to join me to look back at some memorable Preakness rides. Plus, Kurt Becker's stroll through racing history, and you will hear from trainers Steve Asmussen and Chad Brown in the final segment of the show at 10:40 Eastern. If your local station is leaving us at this time, you can continue listening to the third hour of the program nationwide on Sirius 219, XM 201, in the Louisville, Kentucky market on ESPN 680, or on your computer, phone, or tablet with our live streaming at horseracingradio.net. Hour 3 of the Equine Forum is up next, right after I pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Rock Your World's coming from well off the pace here as they make their way into the turn. He's a good 10 lengths off the lead. Then toward the inside, it's Old Pesos. They're being followed by Midnight Bourbon, who's well off the pace as well.
He didn't get away from there as clean as we had hoped, obviously. It would definitely not be the right time to miss the break.
It wasn't his best start, but that race is already run. I think what you're evaluating now is the physical condition of the horse. His spacing in his three-year-old races leading up to the Derby, I think, have allowed him to be in peak physical condition. And the Derby wasn't his best run ever, and he came out of it with plenty of energy. So we're obviously feel very good about how we are looking the week of the Preakness.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com.
Risk-taking, grabs the lead right there, outside the 16th pole, and he begins to edge away from Rock Sugar. It's Risk-taking here in the fourth.
Crowded Trade driving up on the outside. Hyperactive Chris, Crowded Trade, after that slow start, gets the job done nonetheless.
So I have the benefit of 6 weeks again with these two horses out of the wood. So I was thinking about this race, you know, having the time, I'm able to really train the horses the way I want to prepare for a race like this. If you're coming out of the Derby into that race, you know, it's much different. You don't really have much time to think or do anything. I guess there's not much planning. Some people throw a little breeze in, and most people don't now. So it just depends on how much time you have to work with. And I guess additionally, what kind of horse you're working with as far as their foundation goes. I have two horses. One's run a little bit more than the other. So they're a little bit different stages of their careers and experience level. But they both seem to be coming in the right way. And I have been able to train these two exactly the way I wanted to. So they don't have any excuse going in.
Now here's Mike Pena.
Am I the only one out there thinking that Crowded Trade could be the one standing in the winner's circle later today at Pimlico in the 146th running of the Middle Jewel? I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy. I think Crowded Trade is live in that race later today. You just heard Jose Hernandez, the longtime assistant for Chad Brown in Unsung Heroes in the last segment, talking about the fact that Crowded Trade is training really, really well. He likes risk-taking. I think he loves Crowded Trade. And I'm starting to get there, too. Welcome back. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com here in the month of May. What a show it's been. And I appreciate you all sticking with me for the third hour of the show, because plenty more great stuff to come, including Sean Clancy from the Saratoga Special and ThisIsHorseRacing.com. He'll be with me momentarily. You're going to hear Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History, a special Preakness Stakes edition coming up at 10:30. And then right around 10:40, Steve Asmussen and Chad Brown took time to visit with Anthony Stabile on our race day program earlier this week. You're going to hear from both of them. You just heard short clips of Steve and Chad in that open talking about Midnight Bourbon and Chad talking about his two runners. And, you know, Steve saying that that was not the right time to miss the break. No, you don't want to miss the break in a 19-horse Kentucky Derby field. But that was the hand that was dealt to Midnight Bourbon. He was one of just a couple of horses running well at the end. There weren't a whole lot of closers making up ground in that race. Midnight Bourbon was one. Keep Me in Mind was another one. Both of them coming back to take another shot at the Derby winner in the Preakness later today. Poll question at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. And you can also email the show, by the way. Keep those responses coming. You can email me, mike@horseracingradio.net, to let me know your thoughts. Are you cheering for Medina Spirit to win the Preakness? It's an interesting question, because if he does, the dominant storyline over the course of the next 3 weeks is not a horse going for a triple crown. It's the same old rhetoric that we've heard for the past 2 weeks about medication and Bob Baffert. And this horse was drugged in the Kentucky Derby. It's going to be the same thing for 2 weeks, like it or not. So are you cheering for Medina Spirit to win the Preakness? And boy, does it suck to have to answer no to this question, because typically you want the Derby winner in the winner's circle of the Preakness to have a shot at a triple crown. We want that for our sport. But right now, 69% of you saying, no way. We don't want to deal with this over the course of the next 3 weeks. And some of you said, okay, it's not because of Bob Baffert and the situation surrounding this horse. It's because of the fact I'm playing against him. And that's fine, too. I personally think he's going to bounce to the moon. I think he's gassed after that effort. And everything he's had to go through now since getting to Pimlico, all the testing and those types of things, taking him out of his normal routine. I don't know if that has an impact on a horse. Maybe Sean Clancy could tell us. Sean is with me now here for this edition of In the Room, a bit different than you're used to hearing at this time. We efforted Pat Day. Pat was tied up yesterday, couldn't make it. So you get Sean Clancy instead. Sean, welcome, my friend.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on the show. Yeah, I got spun by Hall of Famer Pat Day yesterday. So I guess if you're going to get spun, at least it was by Hall of Famer, right?
Yeah, exactly. And now I get to talk with a champion steeplechase rider, which is in your contract. I have to mention that. I also have to mention that this is the dreamy one, Sean Clancy, joining me here on the Equine Forum.
Yeah, that's right. Thanks for looking up my contract, making sure that still applies. I didn't even know we had a contract anymore, but I'm glad it's still viable.
Hey, we're going to talk a lot about different moments that stand out to you in the Preakness, in particular some of the greatest rides that you've had a chance to witness, which ties into the theme of what this In the Room segment typically is every week. But I'm curious, a horse like Medina Spirit that now gets to Baltimore has to undergo all of these additional steps through the testing procedures, which he normally wouldn't have to do. Does it affect a horse when they come out of their normal routine like that, or do they just kind of go with the flow?
Yeah, I wouldn't worry too much about that. I mean, I think the whole Derby, Preakness, Triple Crown experience is so out of their normal routine that you know, I think something like that is not an issue. I wouldn't worry about that. I mean, I think, you know, coming back in 2 weeks and shipping and all the hoopla and, you know, the energy, the excitement of the Derby and getting there and the stress and pressure they're under, you know, I think it's so out of the ordinary for all of them that I wouldn't worry about that. I think he'll be fine on that front.
Well, talk to me about some of the things that, as you thought back on the Preaknesses that you've witnessed and been part of, some of the things that have stood out to you.
Well, as far as a jockey, you know, from a jockey standpoint, I covered the Preakness for almost 20 years. And, you know, I just remember a little poignant kind of moments in jockeys' careers. Jesus Castaneda, when he won on Shackleford, you know, that was just, you know, that was like culmination, you know, kind of like his, he had never kind of been on that stage, and Dale Romans had stuck with him and delivered a brilliant ride. And I remember talking to him in the jocks room and you know, just kind of that heartfelt moment of his career that made it all worthwhile. I remember that being special. I remember talking to Garrett Gomez after looking at Lucky had won with Martin Garcia. He got taken off. Baffert had taken Gomez off the horse and put Garcia on him after a rough trip in the Derby. And, I actually taught, you know, sitting in the Pimlico jocks room as everything was kind of winding down, and you could just see the hurt, the pain, the frustration of a guy like Garrett Gomez. And, you know, I remember just, he was tearing up, but really just shook up because of it. And you know, you think about what ended up happening to him, and you think about those kind of moments where, you know, the stress of being a high-profile jockey and the wins and losses. And I remember that like it was yesterday, just kind of sitting there at the end of the bench and talking to him. And, yeah, it's things like that. You know, you just kind of look back at all those, you know, Jose Santos on Funny Side. I mean, I remember the kind of the elation, you know, and Stuart Elliott, Smarty Jones, you know, it's all, it just all those guys. I mean, just over the years, Gary Stevens on Oxbow. I mean, that was a huge one. I remember, you know, same thing, kind of the culmination to, you know, to make it worthwhile to come back. And, yeah, those are just amazing moments, you know, in a jockey's career.
This is a day, May 15th, which actually is the exact anniversary of so many moments in our sport. I like to look those things up before I come on the air every week. And in particular, pertaining to the Preakness Stakes, it was on this day, Sean, in 1918, that two horses, War Cloud and Jack Hare Jr., were declared the winner of the Preakness Stakes, but not because of a dead heat, but because the race was run in two divisions. How about that?
Wow, I didn't know that. We have to ask Jude Feld. You know, he'd probably know the history of that. Wow,
he was
that's
there.
Amazing. I didn't
he was
know
there.
That.
1918. He was 12.
Wow.
Yeah, fantastic. How about this one for you? So Dwayne Lucas can win a seventh Preakness Stakes today with Ram, and we know that he can pull a rabbit out of a hat better than anybody. May 15th, 1999 is when Charismatic won the Preakness Stakes.
Wow, yeah, there's a special one with Chris Antley. I mean,
yep,
that horse to do that, you know, same thing, jockey come, you know, kind of the culmination of a long, slow, hard road back to the top for him. You know, yeah, it's just another one.
Why is riding the Preakness, forget about the smaller field, but why is riding that main track at Pimlico completely different than what we see 2 weeks earlier at Churchill in the Kentucky Derby?
Well, I mean, you obviously got a shorter field, which makes it easier. You know, it's a much easier race probably to ride. But you got to, you know, you got the target on your back. I mean, if you win the Derby, you know, the great thing about the Derby, even if you're the favorite, it's such chaos. There's 20 horses that nobody can really focus on you. I mean, all the other riders, yeah, they know who's the favorite, who's going, you know, who's got a chance. But, you know, you're riding your own race. Everybody, you know, it's all on the table there. You don't really, you know, there isn't that, you know, key horse to focus on. So then you get in the Derby and, yeah, there's one horse that everybody's focused on. So that makes it more difficult for as far as the guy that's riding the Derby winner in the Preakness. Yeah, he's got a target on his back. Everybody's going after him. It's a shorter field. Everybody can kind of concentrate on you. It's a totally different ballgame in the Preakness because of that.
Let me give you a couple more historical things, not pertaining to the Preakness, but I know that you can speak to these things as well. May 15th, 1952, that was the day that the great Johnny Longden won his 4,000th race riding at Hollywood Park. And May 15th, 1954, Nashua won his first race running 4.5 furlongs over a straightaway at Belmont Park. How cool is that?
Wow, that's amazing, huh? Wow.
Yeah.
Great horses. I mean, those, yeah, legends. I mean, just you look back at those kind of things, amazing back then.
Yeah, fantastic stuff. I mean, I love diving into some of those things because you forget about, this is also the day that Genuine Risk, the second of three fillies to have won the Kentucky Derby since it began in 1875, gave birth to her first foal after, how about this, Sean, 13 years of failed attempts and miscarriages.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. I remember that that Preakness, you know, the Maryland horse came out and the cover of the Preakness was the picture of Genuine Risk looking right at you and said, I was fouled. And you look back at that Codex and Genuine Risk and just a dramatic renewal of the Preakness. You know, Cordero at his, you know, his best or worst, kind of depending on how you want to look at it. But, yeah, that was awesome filly, you know.
Talking with Sean Clancy, I can say that, the dreamy one. This is horseracing.com and the Saratoga Special. They're getting ready for another big season coming up in Saratoga Springs, New York. I guess you and the team will be back on site. Is that the plan, Sean?
Yeah, that's the plan. I mean, we obviously, Tom Law, he was there last year kind of running the, he was manning the ship, and he was the only one that actually was there. So, no, we're planning on going back up there, and, you know, it'll be, we're going to kind of do a hybrid edition. Won't be quite the same full season like we've done in the past, but, you know, we'll be there in force. Joey will be there, my brother, and Tom Law and I, and a couple interns that hopefully one day will make it big in the sport. And, yeah, covering the sport like we've always done up there. Anxious to get back. Last year, like everybody, was brutal to not be there, not be able to see our friends and, you know, enjoy the really the pinnacle of our sport and you know, all its glory up there. So, yeah, we're anxious to get back up there.
You know, this segment usually reserved for your one-on-one jockey-to-jockey conversations in the room, as we call it. And these have been fantastic, Sean. They've been a wonderful addition to our program. All the sponsorship that's associated with them, we're giving 20% back to support the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund, the PDJF. So there is a charitable aspect to these segments as well. But you have gone in the room with some of the most notable names in our sport. For example, 2 weeks ago, it was Lafitte Pincai Jr. You sat down with Ramon Dominguez and Richard Migliori. What are some of the things so far that have really stood out to you with these in-the-room conversations?
One was amazing with Lafitte. You know, he was talking about his riding career, and at one stage he was really struggling, thinking about going up to Northern California and riding there. And, you know, he said, you know, when you're down and out, and I thought, God, Lafitte Pincai Jr., can you imagine him being feeling down and out? And that's where his career was at one stage, and you know, got it back going. And you kind of forget that how much, you know, that as you get a stat, especially with riding, it is one of those sports. You know, as you get older, you do still have to keep proving yourself because you're getting older. Younger guys coming along, and you know, you think you kind of get established and stay there, but you realize when you're talking to these guys how much pressure they feel to maintain themselves at the top. And I think I got that impression from Lafitte and Ramon, of course. You know, talking about, I was talking about his, you know, retiring, and he was forced out kind of with head injury. And I know I had my head injuries, and basically same reason. I mean, I was, you know, the reason I stopped was because of that. So, you know, you realize how the highs and the lows and the ups and downs and the pressure and the, you know, you realize all of them are under that pressure. And, you know, I was talking to Richard Migliori, you know, he's about balance, you know, trying to live a balanced life. And, boy, riding races is just is about as unbalanced as it gets because of the pressure and the wins and losses. And I know for myself, I found it was kind of a breakthrough when I realized that I was the same person whether I won or lost. And for a long time, I would value myself as a person better if I was winning races and worse if I was losing races. And at some stage, I just kind of came to the, you know, kind of conclusion, or it was really a really kind of a breakthrough moment. I remember thinking, you know, I'm the same person. I'm not a, you know, I'm not a bad person just because the horses are running slower than others. And I think probably all jockeys get that, you know, I think or the earlier you realize that, then it's just easier to, you kind of put those losses behind you and go on for tomorrow. And you know, it's really important to kind of realize that. I know that was one of the big moments for me, to kind of just accept that. And you know, again, it's when you're talking to these guys, you realize how human they are. I mean, they look like, you know, supermen riding, and women, and you know, then you realize they're just as frail and fragile as all of us. So I think that's kind of a, it's been interesting to talk to those guys about that. You know, again, to hear Lafitte Pincai say he was down and out, I mean, you're like, man, Lafitte Pincai down and out, he's the greatest, right? You know?
Yeah.
So I just find that, you know, it just, I always find that interesting to get that human aspect of their lives.
I had a very similar experience this past week with my trainer talk conversation with Todd Pletcher, a newly minted Hall of Famer, Todd Pletcher. He had talked about, I asked him if he ever goes back from time to time to watch replays of some of his big wins, maybe the Kentucky Derby wins or Breeders' Cup wins or whatever it might be. And he said, oh, yeah. He said, occasionally when I need a little pick-me-up, I will go back and watch a replay. And I said, wait a minute, Todd, it's hard to believe that Todd Pletcher would need a pick-me-up from time to time. And he says, oh, when you're in this sport, you need a pick-me-up, let me tell you. What race, Sean, do you think he goes back and watches when he needs a pick-me-up?
Oh, I'd say Rags to Riches, maybe.
Well, that's his favorite race of all time. That's the one moment that always stands out to him. The one he watches when he needs a pick-me-up, Uncle Mo's Breeders' Cup Juvenile.
Wow. Huh.
How about that?
Wow.
Yeah,
wow. I wouldn't have come up with that.
Horse
I would
did.
Have thought I would have said Rags to Riches or one of those early ones, you know, More Than Ready or something that kind of got him going. Wow, that's interesting. I know. I mean, I think that is what you realize with all these guys. I think in any professional sports, you know, athletes for sure, they're human and they're fragile and they have their frailties like everybody else. So you realize that. And, it's amazing.
Yeah, I remember Bill Mott talking about not being able to get stalls when he first started out because his horses weren't good enough, he was told. And then all of a sudden he walks down the shed row years later and there's champion, 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 millionaire, millionaire. Everybody starts somewhere, right?
Yeah, exactly. I remember Bill Mott talking about him. He told me a story about he was trying to get three stalls for his horses, and he asked how he could do it, and everybody gave him advice to go see the racing secretary. I don't know, it must have been Oaklawn Park or somewhere maybe, but it was a much bigger stage than he had been on. And, you know, he went in there and they said, try to look good. So he put a coat and tie on, his only coat and tie he had, and went in there and, set up an appointment, went in there, had his list of horses, and he handed the guy a paper and the guy looked at it and said, nah, these horses aren't good enough for this circuit. Can't help you. And he just slid the paper back and so he walked out of there. He just said, you know, he's never been so humiliated and angry and just, you know, all those emotions of basically being turned down, told you're not good enough, you know. And, I think that's where the guys that are successful, you turn that into motivation. You turn that into a positive and use that to get back there and show them, you know, whatever it is. We all need motivation, and that's what you have to turn that into that. And, you know, you can't get down about it. You can't go crawl in your hole. You got to come out fighting. And, I think that's probably that's where anybody who's made it to the top has had those moments where, you know, push comes to shove. You got to kick on.
Talking with Sean Clancy here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. You can read his articles and his brother's articles and Tom Law's pieces. You can do that at thisishorseracing.com, and you can watch for the Saratoga special again back in Saratoga Springs, New York, later this summer. Sean, I've got about 4 minutes left, but I'd be remiss if I didn't congratulate your brother Joe. And I, by the way, I owe him a phone call, but I want to do it on national radio here. He completed his own personal Triple Crown, winning his third David F. Woods Award. That was announced a couple of days ago. It was for his story called Force of the Filly, covering the 2020 Preakness. And, man, well-deserved, and so happy for your brother.
Yeah, it's a great honor for him. I know how hard he works at it. Yeah, he goes to Pimlico, you know, early, tries to go there all week, talk to trainers and whoever he can find. And he told the story, he's wandering around Pimlico last year, which obviously the delayed Preakness, not a lot of crowd or any crowd, very few riders. And he's just bumbling around trying to find something. And there was Kenny McPeak, Hose and Swiss Skydiver, and just walked over and had one of those great conversations that we've had over the years, you know, standing on the rail with horsemen and as a writer, you kind of get in these moments where you have that moment and you got your tape recorder, your notepad, and you're taking notes. And when you finish, you walk away and say, you know, you kind of think to yourself, boy, I hope Swiss Skydiver wins because that is gold. And that's my story right there. And I know he felt that way then. And, so then when she won, again, as a writer, you have this, when you have that kind of insight or that nugget of kind of an exclusive moment with somebody that will be your lead, it's already written. It's like you've got your story. And if you've done the research ahead of time, the work beforehand, then the writing comes easy because you have that. I remember a couple. I mean, I won a few, and I remember running into Carl Nasker before the Preakness with Street Sense, and he was just walking through the crowd. And you know what Pimlico's like; it's just it's complete mayhem. And I just happened to run into him, and I could see he was walking, kind of going out the back. And I walked with him. I said, "You mind if I come along?" He said, "Sure." So I walked with him back to the Stakes Barn, back to Street Sense's stall, and just stood there talking to him. And I remember thinking, gold, I got it, right? You know, this story. And I thought it was completely, you know, it was totally written until the last few jumps when Curlin got him. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, my God, there goes my story, you know. and I actually used that as a lead and anyway, and that worked out okay. But yeah, that's the work ethic of a good writer. Certainly my brother, who's taught me everything I know about writing, I followed his lead, and I'm glad he got awarded with that. It's a special award. David Neff was a great icon in thoroughbred racing, and yeah, it's cool. I was very very proud of him.
Yeah, so wonderful. Great stuff, and you'll continue to be able to go to thisishorseracing.com and read great stuff throughout the entire year and certainly throughout the summer and leading up to the Breeders' Cup World Championships at Del Mar later this season. Sean, man, I appreciate the visit. Thanks for spending some time. We'll get a hold of Pat Day in the future for one of these segments, and looking forward to hearing more from Sean Clancy and In the Room next Saturday at this time.
So let me just jump in. So Pat Day just texted me while I was on the show, and sorry about that. Didn't have cell service in northern Arkansas. Says I owe you one. So hopefully, let's get him on the show next week.
Yeah, let's do it. Patient Pat. You got to be patient when you're waiting
exactly.
on Pat Day. Absolutely.
Exactly.
All right, thanks, Sean. Appreciate it, brother.
Thanks, Mike. Have a great day.
All right, Sean Clancy here on the Horse Racing Radio. How about this? I gave you some of the historical statistics, this day in history, if you will, pertaining to May 15th. How about this one? Tomorrow, May 16th, 1925, the first network radio broadcast of the Kentucky Derby aired from WHAS in Louisville. How about that? May 16th, 1925. And now we have had the privilege of being part of the Kentucky Derby and the Triple Crown, well, since 2008. If you take it all the way back there, our first Preakness broadcast, Big Brown barreling through Baltimore, the Kentucky Derby came in 2011. And I guess technically it goes back to 07. 07, our first national broadcast, Rags to Riches and Curlin, the Belmont Stakes. So it's been a wonderful ride, and thanks to the pioneers at WHAS in 1925 who got the ball rolling for people like ourselves here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Our coverage this afternoon, well, it continues, 5 o'clock Eastern. You can tune in to our exclusive radio broadcast of the Preakness Stakes, coast to coast and worldwide, in partnership with NBC Sports Audio Network. That comes up on affiliates across the country, SiriusXM satellite radio, and streaming worldwide on our website, horseracingradio.net. When I come back, it's time for Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History. This is the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com on HRRN.
Experience the thrill of Maryland's finest thoroughbred racing at the Maryland Jockey Club at Laurel Park. Kick back and catch the live stream from home, and visit firstbet.com to make a bet, or stop by one of 8 off-track betting locations throughout the state to watch and wager. Visit MarylandJockeyClub.com for OTB details. Live racing Friday through Sunday with holiday exceptions, and simulcasting racing from around the world every day. Post time, 12:25 p.m.
Kirkwood Stables has a long and storied history of producing and selling winners at the highest level.
Here comes the line. Club Pretty wins the Oaks.
Cold Front wins it for the U.S.
From dead last to first, Tom's ready in the Woody Steamer.
But in the slop, it's Funny Duck. By 3.
Mucho Gusto in the Pegasus World Cup.
Late move by Chess Chief on the far outside. Here's Chess Chief.
Kirkwood Stables, proven success. Visit KirkwoodStables.com.
The Spring Summer Meet is live now at Gulfstream Park. Live racing Thursday through Sunday through September 26th. Look forward to the Summit of Speed on Saturday, July 3rd, and the FTBOA Florida Sire Stakes Series, which begins July 31st. Stay in on the action from the comfort of your mobile phone using First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. For the stakes schedule, tips and analysis, and seat reservations, visit GulfstreamPark.com. On-site tickets are limited, so book your seats now.
Adina Springs bred and raced the best son of Hall of Famer Ghost Sapper. Champion, multiple Grade 1 winner, and fellow Hall of Famer Shaman Ghost, who became the first horse in three decades to reel off this historic Grade 1 double.
It is going to be won by Shaman Ghost! He has won the Woodward!
It's Shaman Ghost, an overwhelming force in the last 16th of a mile. Shaman Ghost has beaten Midnight Storm.
Seeing is believing with Shaman Ghost. Learn more at AdinaStallions.com.
Hi, this is Calvin Burrow. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by FarmPaint.com.
And Kodak for Daniel Cordero Jr. has the lead by 2.5. Genuine Red can't catch him. It's Kodak on by the track and fire. Trained by G. Lee Lucas, Daniel Cordero aboard. Kodak wins the Preakness Stakes. The Philly Genuine Red second. After that, it was Brittle Moran, followed by Jacqueline Puck and Nen Bing. Ben Samway at Midnight Landing, and Lucky Puck was third.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com. Mike Penna, Baron in the backstretch. That was Dave Johnson with the call of the 1980 Middle Jewel, the Preakness Stakes. Codex getting the victory for now Hall of Fame trainer Dwayne Lucas. It was the first of his six wins in the Preakness. You heard him talk earlier about the fact that after he won that, his first time there, he thought, okay, well, this is going to be easy. These aren't so hard to win, coming from the quarter horse side of things. Well, guess what? He had to wait five more years until Tank's Prospect came along to win another Preakness. And then, of course, he got the great Winning Colors in 1988 to win the Kentucky Derby. That was certainly special. And Dwayne Lucas, Codex, tied to racing history, as is Kurt Becker. It is time now to take a stroll through racing history.
Hello, I'm Kurt Becker. Thanks for joining me as I take another stroll through racing history presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. He was a handsome bay grandson of Northern Dancer, often described as regal and majestic. It was appropriate, given that he was named for a former King of France, and 25 years ago this weekend, he won the 121st running of the Preakness Stakes. His name was Louis Quatorze. Foaled on March 13, 1993 in Kentucky, Louis Quatorze was offered by breeder Georgia Hoffman at the 1994 Keeneland July Yearling Sale, but was bought back for $225,000. Hoffman eventually sold an interest in the son of Sovereign Dancer to William Cornacchia and Joseph Condren, with future Hall of Famer Nick Zito chosen as the colt's trainer. Louis Quatorze, whose name referred to the architecture and stylings of the reign of King Louis XIV of France, showed promise as a juvenile. He romped by five lengths in breaking his maiden at Saratoga, and he finished runner-up in both the Hopeful Stakes at Saratoga and the Futurity at Belmont Park, both of which were Grade 1 races. Early in his three-year-old campaign, Louis Quatorze won a pair of allowance races at Gulfstream Park, but he was fourth in the Florida Derby to Unbridled Song and runner-up, beaten six lengths to Skip Away in the Bluegrass Stakes at Keeneland. And a difficult journey in the Kentucky Derby would relegate him to a 16th place finish, some 22 lengths behind winner Grindstone. Still, Zito saw an opportunity in the Preakness Stakes when the colt's blood work and x-rays following the Derby revealed no issues. Add the fact that neither Grindstone nor beaten Derby favorite Unbridled Song would be going to the Preakness, and Zito began believing that his horse would not only have an opportunity, but also a legitimate shot at winning the second leg of the Triple Crown. As the first horse on the grounds for the Preakness, Louis Quatorze had several days to get acclimated to the racetrack at Pimlico. On Tuesday, 4 days before the race, he worked five furlongs in 59 4/5 seconds, with exercise rider Jamie Sanders struggling to get him pulled up after the work. In the meantime, Pat Day had become available to ride the horse, which seemed to delight Zito for a number of reasons. For one, Zito and Day had teamed to win four races in the last month, including the $600,000 Pimlico Special with Star Standard a week prior to the Preakness. For another, Day had enjoyed tremendous success in the Preakness, four wins and three runner-up finishes from 10 prior mounts. But the fact remained that Zito was 0-5 in his career in the Preakness, and Louis Quatorze had never won in stakes company. Overnight rains had left the Pimlico racing surface muddy to start the day, but sun and wind helped the track improve to fast by 5:30 p.m. Eastern as the field for the 121st Preakness loaded into the gate. And on a speed-favoring track, Louis Couture's outdueled Skip Away early for the race lead, and he had something left in the tank as the field turned for home. Dave Rodman with the call.
Louis Couture's has a little bit more left. Skip Away on the outside is second. Middle of the racetrack, victory speech at the rail. Here comes Editor's Note in deep, deep stretch. Louis Couture's, and Pat Day wins it again by three. Skip Away second, Editor's Note third. What a Preakness.
Send off at 8-1 and paying $19 on a $2 mutual ticket, Louis Couture's led all the way and became the first wire-to-wire winner of the Preakness Stakes in 14 years. It was the first Preakness triumph for Zito, the third in a row for jockey Pat Day, and it ended a streak which had seen Dwayne Lucas train the winners of six consecutive Triple Crown races. Later that summer, Louis Couture's would win the Jim Dandy in stakes record time at Saratoga, and he would add runner-up finishes in both the Travers Stakes and the Breeders' Cup Classic. He would win his only two starts as a four-year-old in 1997 before being retired to stud with a career record of seven wins and $2 million in earnings. Louis Couture's would sire 600 winners, 36 stakes winners, and a dozen grouper graded winners. He would also become a Grade 1 broodmare sire. All told, he would sire the winners of $40 million before his death of a heart attack at Murmur Farm in Darlington, Maryland at the age of 24 in February of 2017. On this Preakness Day, we remember Louis Couture's on the 25th anniversary of his victory in the second jewel of the American Triple Crown. Please join me again next week as I take another stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. For HRRN, I'm Kurt Becker.
Wow, what a story. And music to the ears of my beautiful wife, Michelle. Louis Couture's, her favorite horse of all time. She feels the same way about Louis Couture's as I do about Holy Bull. Received a text as soon as that started. Didn't tell her it was going to play, by the way. Received a text. She's listening back home in Massachusetts where we grew up. She's back there visiting family and sent me a text saying how much she enjoyed that piece. And I certainly did too, and I hope you did. Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. You can catch it at that time or various times throughout the program, but you can catch it every single week here on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I remember very quickly, before I get to the break, I was a huge victory speech fan, and you heard his name in the call by Dave Johnson. I was a huge fan of his. He never quite proved to be the caliber of a horse like Louis Couture's, but Louis Couture's special and a great remembrance of that horse on this Preakness morning. Going to get to a break. When I come back, you'll hear from trainer Steve Asmussen and Chad Brown talking about their contenders in the Preakness today. This is the Equine Forum, presented by FarmPaint.com on HRRN.
The spring meet is back at Churchill Downs with live racing now through June 26th. New for this year's meet will be the Stephen Foster Preview Day on May 29th with seven stakes races as we gear up for the June 26th Stephen Foster. And don't forget, new this year, Stephen Foster Day has moved to a daytime card with seven total stakes races that include the Breeders' Cup Winning You're In Florida Lee for the Distaff Division and the Stephen Foster for the Classic Division. With strong purses throughout the meet, you're not going to want to miss the spring meet at Churchill Downs. Get your tickets today at churchilldowns.com.
Pin Oak Stud's Alternation ranks highly among Kentucky's fourth crop sires by percentage of black type winners from runners. With nearly $5.5 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by five black type horses in 2020. His brilliant Kentucky Oaks winner, Serengeti Empress, won the Grade 1 Ballerina at Saratoga and was runner up in the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. First or second in six Grade 1 events, Serengeti Empress amassed over $2.1 million. Alternation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
One of the most anticipated events in live thoroughbred racing is back. Join us Friday, May 28th for the $300,000 Grade 2 Penn Mile at Hollywood Casino at Penn National Racecourse. The card will also feature the $100,000 Penn Oaks, the Lifford Stakes, and the With Anticipation Stakes, and there's a guaranteed payout in the Hollywood High 5 that's currently over $200,000. The celebration on the apron starts at 5 p.m. and includes food truck and entertainment with first post at 6 p.m. The Penn Mile, only at Hollywood Casino at Penn National Racecourse. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
Navratilova coming down the center of the course. Lady Edith needs to find a way through. Wide open down to the final 16th. Illegal Smile short lead. Nubas right there too. Lady Edith Navratilova outside. Four of them streaking to the wire together. It's going to be close. Here's the wire. Lady Edith got there.
What a race and what a stakes exacta for Darley Stallion Street Boss. Lady Edith got the best of New Boss by a neck in the Mamzelle Stakes at Churchill Downs on Saturday. Both daughters of Street Boss. And that wasn't the only Street Boss exacta this past week. Two-year-old colt Street Art won on debut at Santa Anita, defeating another Street Boss two-year-old, Bochambo, by four lengths. Each of them worthy of being your Darley Taking the Reins Performers of the Week. Learn more about Street Boss and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
This is trainer Chad Brown, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by FarmPaint.com.
The filly did it. Steve Asmussen did it. He's done it twice so far in the Preakness Stakes. He's looking for a third victory coming up later today with Midnight Bourbon, who is one of just a couple of horses coming back from the Kentucky Derby to take a shot at turning the tables on Medina Spirit. Earlier this week, Steve took time to talk with Anthony Stabile on our race day program presented by Twin Spires, and here's what he had to say about his talented Midnight Bourbon.
You know, any time come back here to Pimlico, you get to relive those amazing moments. And with Rachel Alexander coming in to our barn, you know, Jess Jackson, Barbara Banky of Stone Street bought her 2 days off of her Oaks win. She moved into the barn 3 days later. And then the fact that she wasn't an original Triple Crown nominee, there was the, you know, the chance she would be excluded from running in the Preakness, and then getting to run, drawing the 13 posts, and it was very fast-moving times with Rachel Alexander leading up to the Preakness. But the moment I remember the most is when we walked out of the barn to walk over for the Preakness. I'd never been a part of a horse race that percentage of the public was on one horse's side.
It was remarkable that day. I watched that race not too far from you, and it was pretty remarkable, just the adoration they had for that filly. And it was a little different in 09. In 2007, of course, you won the Preakness for the first time with Curlin, a horse that you had for a lot longer than Rachel Alexandra. What did you do different with Curlin than maybe you did with the filly?
Well, first of all, both of the winners of the Preakness were fast enough. They were good enough horses to win a classic. And Curlin, third place finish in the Kentucky Derby, took absolutely nothing out of it. And you couldn't have been more confident in a racehorse than we were with Curlin going into the Preakness. And obviously the results speak for themselves. And Curlin had he had an aura about him. I refer to him as the most alpha mammal I've ever come in contact with. And anytime you were fortunate enough to be around him, he just gave you all the confidence in the world. So those moments are truly special, and love to relive them.
You're going to literally and figuratively lead Midnight Bourbon over there. The quote I read this week was sensational. Tell everybody why you're going to lead them over there.
It's just a tremendous feeling. It just really is. Midnight Bourbon leading up to the Kentucky Derby, obviously. He's a large horse, feeling himself, obviously a good feeler. But the thing that we had not experienced was a crowd, and it obviously set him off. And I'm probably the largest guy in our barn, so why not me, right? But just the thrill of getting to lead him over there for the Derby. I think now I just want to do it because I'm selfish.
Well, that's a great answer as well. Talk about his Derby a little bit. You know, he had a little bit of a wise guy feel, a little bit of a buzz around him going into the race. He only went off 13-1. I think people thought he would be a lot higher than that. His race was interesting because he took a little bump, but it's the Kentucky Derby. He didn't have his usual speed. Do you blame that, for lack of a better term, on the start?
He didn't get away from there as clean as we had hoped, obviously, or he'd been in all of his previous races. It would definitely not be the right time to miss the break, but it wasn't his best start. But that race is already run. I think what you're evaluating now is the physical condition of the horse. I think he had a solid foundation of races as a two-year-old. His spacing in his three-year-old races leading up to the Derby, I think, have allowed him to be in peak physical condition. And the Derby wasn't his best run ever, and he came out of it with plenty of energy. So we're obviously feel very good about how we're looking the week of the Preakness.
When you take a look at the race on paper, it certainly looks like the front end belongs to one of the two Bob Baffert runners. He's got Medina Spirit in post three. He's got Concertor outside in post 10. Is the plan to be closer on Saturday with Midnight Bourbon?
I definitely expect him to break better. Concertor is obviously the pace of the race. I love our draw, you know, 5 of 10. Medina Spirit's the 3. Obviously, we saw his gutsy performance, and he's capable of some pace. But it would be very surprising to see Baffert hook himself or do the dirty work there for you. So hopefully we're away cleanly, and we'll have to be proved to be a fast enough horse.
Mike Smith goes to Concert Tour. You pick up one of the hottest riders on the planet, in Errat Ortiz Jr. You had success with him in the Triple Crown races already. 2016, you guys teamed up with Creator. Just an amazing ride that afternoon. How much more confidence do you have? I mean, obviously replacing a Hall of Famer, but this guy's just riding, and he's on a different level right now.
Well, you mentioned it. Mike chose to ride Consort Tour, and I think we were extremely fortunate to pick up Irad because, as you mentioned, the flawless ride that he gave Creator made more than a difference in his winning margin. And since Irad's given us one classic, why not give us another one?
Thank you so much for some time today. I know you're swamped. Good luck at the sales. Obviously, good luck this weekend. We'll talk to you soon, Steve. Thanks.
Thank you guys very much.
Well, Chad Brown also joined the Big A earlier this week, and he talked about his two contenders in this afternoon's Middle Jewel.
Well, it was a really special day, and, everything came together at the right time. We had the right horse, the right trip, the right jockey on the horse, and, the right owner from, originally from Baltimore, growing up around Pimlico. So one of the most rewarding days I've had in horse racing, really, to be able to deliver that win for Mr. Clareman, who, again, got his introduction to racing at Pimlico. And I can remember when he hired me, when I asked him, a race or two that would mean the most to him. And he mentioned this race at the top of the list being from there. So to be able to, give back to someone who supported our company, loyally, was really rewarding for me personally.
Talk about the Preakness a little bit. Everybody wants to win the Derby. And then you, of course, turn your eyes to Belmont for the Belmont Stakes. A lot of horses nowadays, they like to skip the Preakness if they don't win the Derby, which is weird since it's, only a mile and 3/16. How do you prepare differently, having run horses in all three legs of the Triple Crown races? How do you prepare differently for the Preakness than, say, the Derby or the Belmont?
Well, it just depends on what you're coming out of, right? So I have the benefit of 6 weeks again with these two horses out of the wood, like we did with Cloud Computing. So I was thinking about this race, even though Crowded Trade had the
the points for the Derby. First of all, it's a little shorter in distance for this particular horse, but you know, having the time, I'm able to really train the horses the way I want to prepare for a race like this. If you're coming out of the Derby into that race, like we had with say Good Magic, you know, it's much different. You don't really have much time to think or do anything. I guess there's not much planning. It's some people throw a little breeze in, and most people don't now. I didn't. But so it just depends on, you know, right, how much time you have to work with. And I guess additionally, what kind of horse you're working with as far as their foundation goes. I have two horses. One's run a little bit more than the other. So they're a little bit different stage of their careers and experience level, but they both seem to be coming at the right way. And I have been able to train these two exactly the way I've wanted to. So they don't have any excuse going in.
All right. So let's talk about Crowded Trade, who was getting a plethora of comparisons to Cloud Computing. Short schedule, just three races, a third in the Wood Memorial. I mean, it's almost, you know, what's a good word for Erie?
Absolutely. Yeah. This horse, he reminded us a lot of that horse right before we were getting ready to debut him, because he got started late, because we left him in the winter there, like we chose to do with Cloud Computing, to separate some horses from our northern division and our South Florida division. And we expected this horse to run very well first time out, and he did. He's never been a great horse out of the gate, and that showed there in his most recent start, which he needs to break better in this race. They're very, very similar. Anthony, I would say that I was more confident of the distance with Cloud Computing going to Preakness than this horse. I'm cautiously optimistic this horse is going to be fine. He seems to really improve since the Wood, and he's been galloping up particularly well in his works. But I will say, going into the Preakness with Cloud Computing, I was certain that he'd be able to get the distance effectively and be right there. With this horse, I'm hoping.
So that brings us to Risk Taking, who went off the tepid 2-1 favorite, a little over 2-1 in the Wood Memorial. The mile and 3/16 should be right in this horse's wheelhouse. Was it that track last time on Wood Memorial Day for him?
Yeah. I have to think that. You know, I hate to use that excuse, but he ran so well prior. It just had a lot of moisture in it. It was heavy. He had a lot of mud in his face and his blinkers. And, you know, his eye was shut the next day. He just took a lot of kickback, and he must have quit from it. You know, and all the horses need to run over the same track, so I'm not big on excuses. And, you know, he needed to persevere and overcome that to run well, and he didn't. So now exiting the race, I have to draw a line through it and hope he can run back to the Withers. And with a, you know, dry forecast coming up here for the weekend, hopefully it holds. He shouldn't have a muddy, heavy kickback to run into, and I'm hoping that's the difference to put him back in form here.
And as far as Risk Taking, like we mentioned, distance should not be an issue for him.
No, I think longer the better for him. you know, initially I was going to run him in the Peter Pan and then the Belmont Stakes, thinking he could even run a mile and a half if he needs to. But with this race, with the defections and looking at the timing of it and how well this horse is doing, and seeing how strong potentially the Belmont's coming up, I decided to pivot and go towards you know, this race and take one, you know, a couple cracks at this one instead.
Medina Spirit's effort in the Kentucky Derby, you know, one of these horses that he's never passed, but he's never been passed. The only other speed, quote-unquote speed in the race, is his stablemate Concert Tour. Do you worry about a little bit of a lack of pace, perhaps, with just those two, apparently the ones that will dictate things early on for either of your colts?
Yeah, you know, it is a concern. I'm hoping they both go on with it. And then hopefully there's another horse or two that decides to go up and keep everything honest. I would hope Crowded Trade wouldn't be too far behind, or Midnight Bourbon. So, you know, hopefully everyone, you know, breaks clean in this race, and there's at least an honest pace to go on.
That's trainer Chad Brown with the Big A, Anthony Stabile. Again, a couple of chances to win the Preakness Stakes again later today. You heard him start by talking about Cloud Computing, looking back on that big win. Special moments for Chad. He's hoping to create more later this afternoon. I'm back to wrap up this edition of the Equine Forum right after this on the Horse Racing Radio Network, proud to once again be your home for the Triple Crown.
And they're into the stretch with Spunderun, the wonder catch, coming to the eight pole. Spunderun drifting out with the lead. Blue Chipper on the inside is second. Omaha Beach has made his way up into third. But Spunderun has run away. Herod Ortiz and Spunderun, the real deal in the dirt mile. They won it by 3.5 lengths.
Gainesway Stallion Spunderun. In the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile, he defeated a loaded field that included multiple Grade 1 winners, Omaha Beach and Improbable. His brilliant speed figures were among the fastest of any 3-year-old at a mile or more, while earning multiple triple-digit buyers up to 110 and running a zero on the thoroughgrass 5 times. Spunderun hails from the legendary Danzig sire line, a multiple greatest stakes winner, millionaire, and Breeders' Cup champion. Great milers make great stallions. Spunderun, standing at Gainesway.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
Racing fans, join us on Saturday for the Middle Jewel in Racing's Triple Crown, the Preakness Stakes from Baltimore, Maryland. Admission gates will open for simulcast wagering on Saturday at 7 a.m. and infield admission gates will open at 9 a.m. Although Santa Anita is now open to the general public, please visit santaanita.com/open for reserved seating. Walk-up admission is not yet available. With a tremendous undercard coming in from Pimlico Race Course earlier in the day, first live post on Saturday is 12:30 p.m. Make plans to join us on Sunday as there will be a mandatory payout on the 20-cent Rainbow Pick 6 jackpot with a total pool expected to reach $3 million. If you can't join us in person, all of Santa Anita's races are still available free of charge at santaanita.com/live, and you can watch and wager via First Bet. That's first.com/bet. With first post time on Saturday at 12:30 p.m., be sure to join Chom Quigley and a special guest at 11:20 a.m. as they handicap the day's card at santaanita.com/live. And don't forget a pair of low takeout wagers laid in the card each racing day for both Santa Anita and Golden Gate Fields, the $5 Golden Hour Double and the $1 Golden Hour Pick Four.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Hi, this is Doug O'Neill. My favorite radio show is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by FarmPaint.com.
Well, don't miss the 2021 Claiming Crown at Gulfstream Park with full fields, big purses, and great betting opportunities. It's presented by a partnership of the National HBPA, TOBA, Florida HBPA, and Gulfstream Park. For more information about how to nominate your horse to the Claiming Crown, simply go to claimingcrown.com. That really is a fantastic event. It'll come up later this year down in South Florida. My thanks to all of our guests who helped make this show possible. It has been a very busy program. Mike McCarthy kicked it off right around 8:15 Eastern, talking about Rombauer, some great insight from Mike. Dr. Mary Scalay was fantastic, talking about the situation surrounding Medina Spirit. Todd Pletcher, you heard from him at 9 o'clock. Andrew Offerman, the Vice President of Racing Operations at Canterbury Park, was with me. Sean Clancy was with me in this third hour of the program. And Steve Asmussen and Chad Brown, you just heard from them a short time ago. A lot of information in a short period of time, and really appreciate you being with me. Poll question this morning. So many of you have taken time to go to our Twitter feed at HRRN and to weigh in on Facebook and to send me emails. I really do appreciate it. Are you cheering for Medina Spirit to win the Preakness Stakes? 68% of you say no. And again, a very sad result, but some people saying no, we're not, because of the controversy that will come along with it over the course of the next 3 weeks leading up to the Belmont. Others saying no. Gene replies and says not because of Baffert, but because I think he bounces to the moon. I actually have to agree with that. I didn't like Medina Spirit in the Kentucky Derby. I didn't go to the wedding. I'm not going to the funeral later today. I do not care for the horse today. I didn't like him 2 weeks ago. I'm going to bet against him. I'm thinking maybe a horse like Crowded Trade, Keep Me in Mind, can really finish too and motor home. One concern with betting a horse like Keep Me in Mind that comes from way out of it, you heard Mike McCarthy talking about Rombauer. The track yesterday played to horses that were up close. If that's the case, the late runners like Keep Me in Mind or Rombauer could find themselves at a disadvantage. I think there's going to be enough pace up front. I don't trust Medina Spirit. I'm going to go with Crowded Trade to upset the apple cart for Chad Brown later today. Great email, too, from Greg, who says, no, he's not rooting for Medina Spirit. We need the story to go away. The quickest way that happens is for the horse to finish off the board. Also, your show and this network are truly incredible. Cannot sing your praises enough. Keep up the amazing work. Greg, appreciate it. Thanks for listening, and thanks to everybody for tuning in here today. My thanks to my producer, Lee Delapina. We're back at 5 o'clock Eastern time with all of our coverage of the Preakness Stakes. Chauncey handled all the social media for you today. My thanks to everybody for making it possible. We'll talk to you at 5 Eastern here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Go Steelers!